How are you?
Good.
Okay. Good to see you.
Good to see you too. Lieutenant Governor.
Okay, no problem.
Swapping out.
I can swap out too. I have a customer's meeting.
I call this meeting of the State Lands Commission to order. All the representatives of the commission are present. I am Chris Garland, the Lieutenant Governor's Chief of Staff and his designee. He sends his regards. He is on his way. To my right is State Controller John Chang and his designee Cindy Ehrenberg. And my left is Karen Finn, representing the Department of Finance. For the benefit of those of you in the audience, the State Lands Commission administers certain properties, interests owned by the state, including its mineral rights and mineral interests. Today we will hear proposals concerning the leasing and management of these public properties. The first item of business will be to adopt the minutes from the commission's February meeting. May I have a motion to approve the minutes?
So moved.
Second.
Moved and seconded. Vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Minutes pass unanimously. The next order of business is the executive officer report. Mr. Folsom, may we have this report? Your microphone.
Thank you. Thank you, and good morning. Good afternoon again. First of all, I'd like to respond to a letter I received a couple days ago from Commissioner Chung. This request regards the State Lands Commission's strategic plan and the fact that it has not been updated in 14 years. That request, we think, is very important. He wants us to identify and focus on some of the most important and urgent issues facing the commission. I think each of the other commissioners' office received a copy of that. Our strategic plan's been a good guide for the last 14 years, but as one might expect, it is out of date on some issues. There certainly are some new issues coming up that the controller has requested to be included in that, and we will be doing that and hoping to get the commission a report back to them later this year. The first one is, of course, sea level rise that he mentioned, and right now we have a bill, Senator Pavley, Bill SB 152, has been introduced in that regard. Also, I'd like to mention that Controller Chung last year as chairman and on the Ocean Protection Council, and this year Lieutenant Governor Newsom supported and approved just last month at the Ocean Protection Council a resolution dealing with sea level rise and giving guidance to both other state agencies and local governments on that issue. We also are being asked to look at litter and debris and restrictions with our leases to try and help limit that taking place. We already have some restrictions, but we'll certainly look at expanding those in trying to prevent additional pollution of our waters. Commissioner Chung is asking us to look very carefully at market rate leasing. That's certainly something we're also very interested in. We've been, the Bureau of State Audits has been in our office 5 months now going over our practices and asking us quite a few questions in that regard. And of course, we do have a bill in the legislature right now to remove the prohibition on charging rent for certain recreational piers in state waters. Additionally, one of the issues that's been arising lately is the ability of the commission to actually monitor what's going on with the local governments, the trustees of local tidelands. Issues have been raised at Long Beach by the Pacific Merchant Shipping Association. Controller Chung is asking us to look into Redondo Beach, and there's also others. We have 85 local grants, and each one of those is managing lands for the state, and yet we really don't have the ability to properly audit them and investigate them. And so we're going to be looking at ways to do that and also look at internal practices to try and improve that. He's asked us to support legislation and programs that protect the ocean and the coast, and certainly that is one of our primary goals. So we'll be looking at that, and there's also bills right now dealing with shoreline protection that are in the legislature. Today we're going to be asking the commission to oppose one of those bills. A little later I'm going to be talking about our website, to focus on having new technology and using that technology to improve our communications with the public and inform the public is certainly a very important factor, and at the end of my presentation we'll be showing a little bit more of that. And then finally, a very important issue dealing with our ability to deal with the United States and the lands they control. They control a substantial amount of land in our deserts. The commission also has hundreds of thousands of acres, but they're scattered. And so we would like very much to function in a way to provide alternative energy projects, solar energy projects, geothermal, wind projects, all kinds of alternative energy, even wave projects offshore. But with the federal government, we're looking at ways to try and exchange lands. We have hundreds of thousands of acres, again. The federal government has their own projects. There is a bill, AB 982, by Assemblywoman Skinner, and we're going to work with her office to see if we can't do some amendments on that bill that would help us in that regard on improving alternative energy projects. The next thing I'd like to discuss is what took place in Japan. The day the Ocean Protection Council passed the sea level rise guidance document was the same day that the earthquake and tsunami took place in Japan. And I'd like to touch on all three of the disasters of both the earthquake, tsunami, and nuclear effects of that natural event. First of all, I'd like to mention, and I did mention at the last meeting of the commission, that Martin Iskegian, one of our engineers, was awarded a national award by the American Society of Civil Engineers for his research and work on earthquake safety. He has traveled to Japan after the Kobe incident, to Chile. He's traveled to Turkey and New Guinea and India after seismic events in each of those places and has learned a lot and incorporated that information he's learned into our MOTEMS program, which is the Marine Oil Terminal Engineering and Maintenance Standards that the commission adopted. Basically, Martin's the father of that program, and we're very happy to have him on our staff. We also have some younger engineers coming along, and Alex Augustin in our Long Beach office has been selected by the American Society of Civil Engineers to go to Japan as part of a recon team to look at the effects of the earthquake and tsunami there. As to California, we've all read about the $50 to $75 million in damage that happened to our coastal development there, whether it's docks or marinas, boat harbors, and that, even though Crescent City was the worst hit and there was one loss of life there, reported damage exists all the way down to San Diego Bay. So we had an enormous event that happened in California. It wasn't as bad as the 64 Alaska earthquake when 11 people died in California, but we can also anticipate that there will be future such events. In fact, the state geologist reported that there is a potential for a 15-foot tsunami in Southern California and a 25-foot tsunami in Northern California. Last Wednesday, your Marine Facilities Division had its annual customer service meeting at the Northern California Field Office, and certainly the tsunami was one of the top issues being discussed at that. We had representatives from the Corps. The San Francisco Bay Colonel, who's in charge of the Corps for this region, was there and spoke. The Coast Guard Captain, she spoke as well, and representatives from US EPA and Fish and Game Oil Spill Prevention Response, as well as the Commission staff, all spoke on issues relating to the tsunami event. And I want to mention that the Coast Guard Captain specifically complimented your staff on its assistance and cooperation in response to that event. That earthquake that took place on March 10th triggered a tsunami in California that arrived approximately at 8:30 on that following Friday. While it wreaked considerable damage, it did not really occur on any damage to the marine terminals that the commission regulates. Fortunately, there was early notification from EMA and the Coast Guard, and that enabled at 1:30 in the morning our marine facilities offices to contact all the marine oil terminal operators by fax and phone to warn them of the anticipated 3-foot tidal surge. They all took precautionary measures in response to that. Actual suspension orders were ordered by the Coast Guard captains in both the Bay Area and in Los Angeles, Long Beach, to cease any kind of oil or hazardous material transfers later that morning at 7 and 8 o'clock, respectively. Later that afternoon, those orders were withdrawn and things returned generally to normal. We thank your staff, your MFD staff personnel responded swiftly and professionally in dealing with that event. In addition, our offshore oil operations on oil rigs and islands also were notified and took precaution. Our staff notified those operators of those facilities to take precautionary measures to ensure that there would be both personnel safety and pollution prevention at those sites. Basically, there was no sign of any impacts on any of those offshore oil operations. Again, part of the engineering that our staff does is to make sure that's going to stay that way. If there had been a severe warning, then evacuation vessels were in standby and the platforms would have been shut down. Fortunately, the event wasn't that substantial. In Long Beach, drilling operations were discontinued for part of that day. Last week, the staff also notified all our marine oil terminal operators, all 39 of them, of their obligations to have a tsunami plan for their operations and regulations that provide guidance, and that's on our website as well. The staff developed this program a few years ago. The commission approved it in 2009, and after going through the regulations, it became part of the California Building Standards Code and enforceable on January 1st of this year. So the obligations for these facilities, these marine terminals, to have tsunami safety plans is already on the books. As to the nuclear issue, the State Lands Commission has leases at both San Onofre and Diablo Canyon with Southern California Edison and PG&E respectively. Southern San Onofre has a 30-foot seawall that helps protect them from potential tsunamis, and at Diablo Canyon, the facilities there are generally 85 feet above sea level, so the threat of a tsunami at either one of those is fairly rare. But earthquakes certainly are a factor. In fact, just in 2008, a new fault was found just offshore of Diablo Canyon within a mile of the facility there. So just a couple days ago, we were contacted by the Pacific Gas and Electric staff, and we are meeting with them. Your staff is meeting with them on Tuesday to discuss an offshore seismic survey to get more information about the threats that may exist at that place. And I'd like to add that just last week, a week ago today, there was a 4.2 earthquake off of the central coast of California. The next thing I'd like to discuss is that Redondo Beach, at the last meeting, Controller Chung asked that an item be removed from the agenda dealing with expenditure of Tidelands revenues for a facility there, and asked that we look into some issues regarding potential misuse of funds. The city has responded with substantial information for us. We've just received it, however. In the meantime, we did follow up and look at that item for a harbor patrol facility. We looked at what kind of funds were available for that facility and what the needs were, and we've placed that back on our agenda as item C18 on the consent agenda because staff believes that it does not involve any of the issues that have been raised at this point. We will be following up on those issues of the other funds, however. I have three last items, hopefully positive items, to mention to the commission. One of them is that I'm very pleased to report that our anticipated oil profit revenues to go to the general fund are expected to be more than 10 times that was estimated early on at $45 a barrel. Prices are now well over $100 a barrel in Southern California, and rather than the projected $30 million that would go to the general fund, we're expecting over $300 million that the commission will pass on there. Although it does hurt us at the pump, it does help the general fund. At the last meeting, I also reported that we were beginning continuing work and beginning work on our hazard removal program in Santa Barbara County. And I have just a few slides I'd like to share with the members as well as the public here. Basically, the program that we have ongoing there, this is a slide indicating all the different sites that we identified a few years ago along the Santa Barbara coastline. There's also one in Ventura, of remnants from prior activities in the ocean. 34 years ago this week, the Commission Executive Officer wrote our Secretary for Resources requesting funds for hazard removal on the coast. Several injuries had taken place to members of the public, and that request noted that prior removal efforts had actually taken place in the 50s, 60s, and 70s. That year, legislation was did provide funding for removal of removal of hazards within the Sacramento River, American River Delta, and Lake Tahoe. Subsequently, funding was made available, and a number of sites were remediated in the late 80s. However, 10 years ago, another study was conducted, and over 400 individual hazards on 24 sites were located along the Santa Barbara and Ventura coastline. In 2002, the commission received funding, a total of $900,000, and was ready to remove hazards from these sites when the general fund fell short and led to the governor's executive order that required state agency to disencumber contracts where goods and services did not proceed, and those contracts were canceled, and the program ceased to go forward at that point. Most hazards that exist down there consist of steel, wood piles, or pilings, oil well casings, well caissons, rock and concrete groins, rail irons, abandoned electric cables and pipes, and at least one deep offshore wellhead. To date, we've only been able to find a few responsible parties, so the rest of it is basically left up to receiving grants from either state or federal or other sources. Under the Coastal Impact Assistance Program, which was a Federal Energy Policy Act of 2005 program, the commission actually received a grant in July of 2008 to fund the program. And we asked for $1 million, they authorized $700,000. To date, we've spent $250,000 approximately of that, and just yesterday we were notified by the resources agency that the additional funding is now available to us that we were gonna spend in subsequent fiscal years, and so we will continue the program and move ahead on other hazards that exist there. The two hazards that we've worked on this year so far are Site 15, which is in the Montecito area, and as you can see there, these are remnant steel groins that existed probably for the last 80 years, eroded away, and have provided a substantial hazard to the public wanting to use the beaches. We focused on these because of the potential harm to the public. When we first estimated the cost of removal of this one, we identified a 60-foot-long area. Because of winter storm action in the area, ultimately when our contractor was out there, it turned out it was 200 feet long, and they were able to remove substantially more, but it of course cost us more. The next slide is Site 22, which is down coast of the one you just looked at, and there we identified 60 railroad rails that had been driven into the beach to try and protect the shoreline at that area. Once we began, our contractor began removing that, we found 480 of those rails there, and so they have all been now removed. And this is what the beach looks like at those two locations since we've completed that. Those two elements of the project. The next project we're looking at is up at Elwood. There's been substantial removal of hazards in the past in that area. It was a very active oil development area in the 1930s with lots of remnants. Periodically, new ones will be exposed, and so the next project we're looking at is to remove some of those at that location. Finally, I'd like to just say that funding continues to be a problem. We know it's funding is a problem for the state, funding is a problem for the federal government, but when we're looking at public health and safety issues, we still take it as a very high priority, and we'll be continuing to look for sources of funds to continue this program. And that concludes that part of my report. I have two last things to mention. We have a new website for the commission. One of the things the commissioner Chung also mentioned in his letter to us was the ability to have better communications and use things. This was the existing website up until about a week ago. We now have up and running a new website that we'll show you. And we believe it's much more accessible to the public and provides a lot more information. And so we hope that the public will find that we've already had comments on it, positive comments, and so we're looking forward to any other comments from the public or the commissioners if they have suggestions as to how to improve this. So we're pleased to provide this to you at this time. I noted that I looked at the governor's website this morning, and of the six photographs on the governor's website, four of them shows lands under the commission's jurisdiction, which I thought was interesting. And finally, I'd like to just mention that on the legislative front, that we do have a consent item number 13 on our agenda today, dealing with a former executive officer of the commission. And if with any luck, if SB 152 by Senator Pavley passes, he will be paying rent to the state in the future, along with former Lieutenant Governor Garamendi, both who have leases from the commission and boat docks on the state's waterways. So we're hoping that's going to happen. Thank you. That completes my report. You have the microphone. I should also mention that the items that have been pulled from the consent agenda and the regular agenda are C-41, C-42, C-50, and regular item number 69.
Thank you, sir. Questions from the commissioners?
I do. A number of questions. And that was a clarification. Thank you. I have a number of questions. First of all, thank you to staff for upgrading the website. I think it's incredible work. First, when referencing the website, Curtis, I noticed that we have a large number of public access easements. The Coastal Commission has them on their website, and so I'd like us to link that page to our website.
Great idea.
At the outset, you referenced the tsunami. And so plaudits to our staff for their work on that. A number of things. Are there any takeaways that the public should know about in terms of what we need to do in California as a result of that tragedy in Japan? And my heart goes out to the people, obviously, of Japan, as I'm sure the commission's does. And is there anything that is actionable that we ought to take immediate note of so that California does not have to visit such a situation in the event that should fall upon us?
Thank you, Commissioner. We've thought about that a lot. I think obviously our focus is on trying to prevent oil spills primarily, but the commission does have a bully pulpit of sorts, and I think that, in fact, this morning I believe I saw an article in the paper talking about an early warning system. That could be implemented if appropriate funding was available, that would give people at least a 30-second, I guess it was, a very short period, but a warning if an earthquake was going to take place. And certainly the same thing could be true of tsunamis. Hawaii has a pretty elaborate system in that regard. We're not the Energy Commission, and we're not seismic experts when it comes to other areas of the state, but when it comes to the two areas that we really are involved in oil terminals and in offshore oil facilities, I think we are certainly going to take any lessons we learn. As I said, one of our staff, at least one, maybe two of our staff, will be going over to Japan, hopefully within a month, to speak to people there and investigate that. So we hope we can learn from that, but we can certainly also, when it comes to possible legislation or other efforts that might help prepare us for ultimate events like that, we can keep that in mind and bring it to the commission's attention.
Can you communicate to staff that is traveling to Japan and the others who are involved to communicate with Hawaii, obviously to get a sense of what best practices are? Obviously, we are a resource challenge in this state, but to identify if there's any low-hanging fruit and perhaps a short, medium, long-term approach to get to the place we need to be.
Certainly.
And then what is the level of compliance in regards to the regulations regarding the tsunami plans that you referenced?
Either Martin Estijan, who is, as I mentioned, is kind of the father of our MOTEMS program, or Kevin Mercer, the head of the division, probably have better information, and we can ask them. But my understanding is that those regulations are in effect. They're supposed to have them. The way the system is set up, that we do audits on them periodically, every 3 years, I believe, we're supposed to be auditing all their practices, which would include the tsunami plan. But as far as immediately going out and investigating each of those plans or having enough staff to do that, I'd have to refer to them to see, you know, what the status of that is. If you'd like that answer, we can.
Or if we could just send a note to each of the jurisdictions.
Sure.
We have done that.
In fact, a letter went out, I think it was March 29th, to each of them, and in fairly good detail that the plans should include not only the long-term tsunami impacts, such as from Japan or Alaska, but short ones as well, something happening off the California coast. I think everything that we know at this point about seismic activity in California is that the threat is much less severe in Southern California and Central California than it is in the Northern California because of the way the plates are offshore, but that doesn't mean it couldn't exist. So the threat to many of the facilities along the coast may be more from earthquake than from a tsunami event, although, as I mentioned, the state geologist was reportedly saying that there could be a 15-foot tsunami in the Southern California and 25 in the north. A lot of what we've been reading is you know, dealing with the nuclear power plants, because that was obviously something that was very focused on by the public with our two plants on the ocean. And your staff is going to be working on looking at the PG&E one as early as next week, and I expect that very soon we may be coming back to the commission with a plan to look at that analysis of the offshore structures to know how safe that area is. Senator Blakesley, who's I believe a geophysicist, has been in the paper reportedly asking a lot of questions and asking for moratoriums and things like that. I believe it's 2024 or something around there when PG&E's license expires for Diablo Canyon, and so they had already started applying for a new license from FERC, and so whether or not that will go forward or whether they'll be reassessing that, I think one of the reasons they're doing this, wanting to do a seismic study soon, is to do that kind of analysis to see exactly how safe things are right now. But we'll keep the commissioners posted on anything we learn in that regard. We can forward information and keep you aware so it's not just at commission meetings.
Can you provide additional background information? You said a fault a mile away from Diablo recently discovered.
Well, what I learned was that there was one earlier that was within 4 miles of the offshore that geologists had identified several years ago. But just in 2008, a new one was located. I don't know any of the details on that other than it was within a mile, reportedly. And so that, you know, a lot of this information is coming out because of what happened in Japan. It's now being focused on a lot. So we'll certainly work not only with the companies that have leases with us, such as Southern California Edison and PG&E, but also with the other agencies that are looking into this to make sure that it's a coordinated effect, and we will try and prepare. I want to also mention that when the Ocean Protection Council passed its resolution last month, one of the things they identified is that and they were focusing on sea level rise at the time, but even without a tsunami, there was an estimate that with a 100-year storm on the coast, no seismic activity, no tsunami, but a 100-year storm and projected sea level rise for this century, it could affect 480,000 people were threatened by that, and you know, many billions of dollars. I know I have it in my notes here somewhere. I can't remember. But it was a huge amount of money that would also potentially be costs to the people of California. So sea level rise is huge as well. And we certainly know at this point that unless trends change, that that's going to be an enormous problem, whether there's any kind of seismic activity.
And the design of the offshore seismic study that they're going to do off Diablo, I guess, by PG&E. Who finances it? Who designs the study? Is that
They would be financing that, and it would. We expect it would be a full-blown EIR, and that would have to be brought to the commission for review. And this is something that hasn't been done a lot in the last number of years because of the concern for its impact on both marine mammals as well as any humans that might be out in the ocean. The type of geophysical analysis that goes on to get good data can be harmful to the environment. And so when the commission has been approving geophysical permits in recent years for studying the ocean floor and so forth, it's a much less of an impact on the environment. And so we expect that with PG&E will be doing something, it will require a full-blown EIR to analyze those potential impacts. And we'll be talking with them next week about that.
And then to the Attorney General, do we have any discretion on item 62?
The short answer is that based on the statute and the language of the statute and the evidence into the record, you virtually have no discretion but to approve the plan.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much.
Next question. Anything from finance? Thank you. Then we've already dispensed with number four on our script here. Are we clear that items C-41, 42, and 50, and regular item 69 are the only ones being removed from the agenda today?
That's correct.
Excellent. Is there anyone in the audience who wishes to speak to an item still on the consent calendar? Seeing none, the remaining group of consent items will be taken up as a group for a single vote. We'll now proceed with that vote. Can I have a motion? Move approval.
Second.
Been moved and seconded. All those in favor? Aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? The consent calendar is unanimously adopted. Thank you. The next item on the agenda is item number 67. I have, with hopefully your consent, I would like to push this one back until my boss reps.
Sure.
The Lieutenant Governor would like to be here for this one, and I'm assured he is on his way. So we will at least temporarily move 67. Moving on to the next item, number 68, is to consider the status update on proposed title settlement and land exchange agreement involving certain parcels in Long Beach. May we have the staff presentation?
Yes, Chair and Commissioners, Jennifer Lucchesi, I will be giving the staff report for this item. Commission staff and City of Long Beach staff have been in discussions regarding a proposed title settlement and land exchange agreement concerning certain parcels adjacent to Queensway Bay, within and adjacent to the Colorado Lagoon, and adjacent to the Pacific Ocean, all in the City of Long Beach. The purpose of this staff report is to update the Commission on the status of the negotiations for the title settlement and land exchange agreement. Certain filled parcels within the former Queensway Bay development, since renamed the Pike at Rainbow Harbor, were the subject of a previous land exchange agreement approved by the Commission in 2001. That exchange was subsequently challenged in court, and in 2005, the Court of Appeal invalidated the exchange. The consequence of the invalidation of the exchange is that there are now currently non-trust uses on public trust lands. Commission staff believes that the most appropriate mechanism to resolve the conflict over the uses of these public trust lands is a new title settlement and land exchange agreement pursuant to Public Resources Code Section 6307. Commission staff and city staff have been involved in cooperative and extensive negotiations over the past 3 years on such a title settlement and land exchange agreement. Commission staff has anticipated that negotiations on the title settlement and exchange would be completed by today's meeting. However, there are some additional technical details, such as finalizing legal descriptions, which remain incomplete. While Commission staff believes that it is therefore premature to bring this agreement to the Commission for its final consideration, because of these minor final details outstanding, Commission staff and city staff are very close to finalizing this exchange and the agreement terms that provide benefits both to the public trust, the city, and the state. Therefore, staff recommends that the Commission direct staff to continue working with city staff on finalizing the details of the title settlement and land exchange agreement with the objective of presenting a proposed agreement to the Commission for consideration at its next meeting. That concludes my presentation.
Thank you. Any comments from the commissioners on this item? Seeing none, public comment. I don't believe we have any requests at this time. Seeing none behind anyone, there is no reason for a motion on this. Am I correct?
No.
We are, staff is asking that the commission directs commission staff to continue working with the city staff on this and bring a proposed agreement to the commission at its next meeting.
Do we have a motion and a second on that?
Shall move staff's recommendation.
Second.
Having a motion and a second, all those in favor? Aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? It passes. That brings us to item 69. Item 69 is to consider supporting legislation.
That one has been removed.
Has been pulled. That's correct. I'm so good about following my script. Item 70 is to consider the resolution supporting the San Francisco Bay Restoration Act. May we have the staff presentation?
Hi, good afternoon. I'm Jennifer DeLeon. I am with the Division of Environmental Planning and Management, but currently also filling in part-time with the legislation. Thank you, Curtis. Thank you, Jennifer, for entrusting me with that. I'm here to give a very, very brief overview of items 70 through 73. The first two, 70 and 71, pertain to federal legislation that we are asking you to support by way of passing a resolution, and we've provided those resolutions in your packet. The second two are asking for your opposition to two state bills, and those are items 72 and 73. The first item, 70, is to ask for your support on Senate Bill 97 by Senator Feinstein. This is the San Francisco Bay Restoration Act of 2011. Last year, also on April 6th, but of 2010, a very similar bill and a similar resolution was placed in front of the commissioners for their support, and they did. This bill is slightly different than last year's bill. That bill did not become law. This bill is different in that it does not establish a program office, but rather simply asks for activities to be carried out, and it does not specify a funding amount as was specified in last year's bill. This bill amends the Clean Water Act to establish a 10-year grant program administered by the EPA for the purpose of ecosystem restoration in the Bay and its estuaries. This would be to implement the goals of the San Francisco Estuary Partnership's Comprehensive Conservation Management Plan, which was a collaborative effort among many agencies and local stakeholders. The projects would be based on priority, and the priority list would be set by the administrator of the EPA, along with state, local, affected governments, and other interested parties. And we believe that you should support this and pass the resolution because a coordinated ecosystem-based approach to restoring and maintaining the vitality of the San Francisco Bay would greatly improve public trust values of these lands for all the people of the state of California.
Thank you. Next is public comment. I don't believe we have any on this item. Am I correct? Yes. Any comments from the commissioners on this item?
I just have a question. And again, did you say it does require coordination with the current state agencies that might have jurisdiction in those areas versus the Bay Conservation Development Commission? And
yes.
It would, okay. I didn't know if you.
Yes, the priority activity list would be activities that were meant to effectuate the goals of the comprehensive management plan, but it would require the EPA administrator to coordinate with state and local governmental agencies as well as non-governmental stakeholders and interested parties.
Okay. Thank you.
Any additional questions? This time we take a motion to approve the proposed resolution as written in our packet. Do I have a motion?
Move approval.
And a second?
I'll second.
Having been moved and seconded, we'll take a vote. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? That passes unanimously. Thank you very much.
Thank you. The second resolution we are putting in front of you is for Senate Bill 432, also by Senator Feinstein. It is also co-sponsored by Senators Boxer, Reed, and Ensign. This is the Lake Tahoe Restoration Act of 2011. Again, a similar bill and resolution was placed in front of you last year. That bill, Senate Bill 2724 of 2010, did not become law. The 2011 version is very similar, nearly identical. The one main difference is that it establishes a 10-year restoration program rather than an 8-year restoration program. This bill would authorize $415 million over 10 years to implement various restoration activities at Lake Tahoe, including improvements to water clarity, invasive species prevention. It would also seek to reintroduce Lahontan cutthroat trout to the lake, and it would also partner with forestry to reduce the threat of fire and erosion. It builds on efforts started under the original Lake Tahoe Restoration Act of 2000. It contains improvements, importantly, to monitoring, accountability, transparency, and reporting of project-related spending. We ask you to support this bill because implementation of the projects that would be undertaken would greatly enhance the public trust lands and easements in the area for the people of California.
Move approval.
I'm sorry, just one last question. Who would manage this? Sorry. Who would allocate these funds in the federal agency? Does it come directly to the state? Is it to be allocated by Interior, or did it say?
It doesn't say.
Okay. But the state would it be split between Nevada and California, or is this all for California, or?
I think there's a multitude of agencies that benefit. It includes things like the after the fire that took place up at Tahoe, water quality issues impacted by those issues of having fire. So it's not only directly in the lake itself, but around the lake. And so I think that probably the Forest Service, but also one of the things we've had happen in recent weeks and months is CalTRPA, Tahoe Regional Planning Authority, has lost most of its staff, in fact, the regulatory body for the lake, due to budget cuts. They had anticipated generating revenue from programs that they had adopted that were that the courts found didn't comply with the law. And so I imagine some of these funds would typically be managed through that agency as well. But if you'd like more detail on that, we can certainly get you some more.
That's right. But I would second the motion.
Having a motion and a second on adopting the resolution, take a vote. All those in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Opposed? Passes unanimously. Thank you very much for the presentation. Next item.
Thank you. The next item is to request opposition to Senate Bill 385 by Gaines. This bill would establish the state's landward limits of public trust interests at the low water mark, which is an elevation of 6,223 feet, Lake Tahoe Datum. This would effectively eliminate the state's public trust easement at Lake Tahoe. Currently, the state owns the submerged lands waterward of that low water mark and maintains a public trust easement between the low water mark and the high water mark. These were established via court ruling. This bill, if passed, would contradict those court rulings and would reestablish through legislation ownership and easement boundaries. It appears to be an attempt to limit the public access rights that exist between the low and high water mark and would essentially turn the shore zone area around Lake Tahoe over to private ownership. It would also potentially violate two articles of the state constitution relating to public access and also gifts of public property.
Any questions or comments from the commissioners? Having none, I don't believe we have any public comment either. We'll take a motion.
Move to take an opposed position.
And a second.
I'm going to have to abstain for the Director of Finance on
second.
State legislation.
Having been moved and seconded, we'll now take a vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? Abstention?
Aye, abstain.
that goes out 2-0 with an abstention from Finance. And that would bring us to our next item, number 70. First of all, thank you for that presentation. That would bring us to item 73.
Thank you. Item 73 is we are asking for opposition to Senate Bill 876. I believe that is Harmon. This bill would mandate that when the commission issues a lease for shore protection structures for the use of private parties, that the leases be for a mandatory term of 99 years, and that rent would be limited in the number of times rent review could occur, and would be limited to, would be tied directly to the consumer price index. Currently, we do have the authority to grant private property owners the right to build and maintain shore protected structures. That would be things like seawalls. If these structures do not unreasonably interfere with the uses and purposes reserved for the people of the state. The commission may also fix and collect reasonable charges or rents for the use of those lands on which the structures are located. Staff requests that you oppose this bill because it limits the ability of the commission to determine a reasonable lease term and reasonable rent. It would require the leases be issued for 99 years, and currently our practice is to not issue leases in excess of 49 years. It would also limit the ability of the commission to set appropriate rent. The consumer price index is tied to consumer goods and services, not to real estate. So we are concerned that because it doesn't bear a relationship to property values, the commission may not collect the revenue that it is due.
Mr. Chair, because the controller has left at this point and only one alternate can represent a constitutional officer, I'd request that any vote on this item be postponed, given the fact that we're not going to get a second.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And that we move on to, and we can bring it back after we handle the other items on the agenda. So we can either take up item 74 or 75 at this time.
Excellent. So folks know we're going to pass on any action on 73 at this time until another elected member of this commission gets here, which hopefully will be my boss in short order. Until then, we will move on to item 74 and consider a resolution opposing the conversion and expansion of Mustang Airport.
Do we acknowledge we can't take a vote, though?
We acknowledge we will not be able to take a vote. We will only be...
You may take a vote. Only two...
Oh, that's true.
Only one of the two alternates to the constitutional officers may participate and vote on the item.
Right.
I'm happy to give my colleague from the controller's office this one if she'd like.
Only one of you.
Excellent. But either way, we will at least now start with the presentation by the staff.
Sure.
Thank you.
And before we get started on that, I just want to mention that we have a number of people who have requested to speak on this item. However, there's some confusion as to the boxes that were checked, and I think Kim has provided you with stacks that reflect opposition to the calendar item and support of the calendar item. And of course, the calendar item is one in which the commission is being asked to oppose or to adopt a resolution opposing the airport expansion. So some of the people in opposition to the calendar item, in fact, put support because they believe they're supporting the airport, and I just wanted to clarify that.
And I believe Kim has straightened this out and given me correct stacks.
Great.
So when we get
and
to that,
and we'll... it's up to the commission how they want, whether they want to take them in groups or alternating or whatever.
Excellent. Thank you, sir. Any presentation?
All right, first slide, good. Good afternoon, commissioners. My name is Eric Milstein. I am your senior staff counsel assigned to this matter. I want to give you a brief overview of the reason we need this resolution, and I'll be happy to answer any questions you may have. Next slide, please. Just some background on the Cosumnes River Preserve. First acquisition of property was in 1984, and then over the years into the mid-90s, more property was acquired along the Cosumnes River and in the general area to make up the preserve, our involvement coming in the mid-90s. It's important to note that Mustang Airport didn't start operations until 1990. Next slide, please. Okay, today the preserve is made up of over 60 properties, 46,000 acres, and seven landowning partners, including the State Lands Commission. Next slide, please. Our involvement, the bed of the Cosumnes River at this location is sovereign lands. In 1998, an additional 263 acres were purchased. In 2008, the commission entered into a management agreement with the other partners in the preserve. And in 2010, actually 1 year ago today, the commission authorized staff to take legal action if necessary regarding the Mustang Airport project. Next slide, please. This is just an overview of the preserve properties, the individual parcels, and who owns which individual parcel. Next slide, please.
I'm sorry. Could you go back?
Sure. Sorry.
Oh. Oops, sorry.
There we go.
Just, I'm having trouble finding.
Okay.
There.
Oh, is that a pointer?
If you could use the mouse.
Yeah, do you have the mouse for me?
Yeah, the red arrow, too?
It'll actually show a cursor on the screen.
Okay. Right.
Where is it?
Actually, further down, it's the kind of the magenta parcel, a little further south. Oh.
Right there.
Commission acquired is here.
Right there, yes.
The airport.
And the airport
will be located right there.
Is right there. Okay.
I have a clearer slide.
Okay. All right. We'll get to it. Okay.
And the Cosumnes River is.
And the river is. I see. Okay.
Yeah. This is just kind of the big picture.
Right there. Okay.
Next slide, please. The Mustang Airport project. Before I start, I want to emphasize that it's the position of staff and the preserve partners that we do not object to the current use of the airstrip at its current level of operations. Objection is to the expanded operation which is being proposed. Next slide, please. Here are the proposed improvements. The airstrip started operations in 1990 as a privately owned personal use airstrip with approximately 2 flights per week. The current use permit at this level of operations has expired. The numbers on this slide are what the applicant has asked the county for and are self-imposed limitations on operations. Sacramento County has determined they cannot enforce these limitations because they would be preempted from doing so by federal law. Their estimate, the county's estimate, is approximately 15,000 flights annually. Next slide, please. Here is a more detailed aerial of the Mustang Airport and the Cosumnes River Preserve property surrounding it on 3 sides. Again, I want to emphasize that the preserve started in 1984. The airstrip started operations in 1990. And contrary to statements that have been made, there's no evidence of any sort of agreement as part of the purchases of property by the Nature Conservancy and the airport regarding future expansion of the airport. Next slide, please. Our 2 main concerns are public safety and environmental harm. Next slide, please. While I'm here as your attorney, I am also a retired Navy flight officer, and to put it simply, birds and airplanes don't mix well. I've placed this photo here for a couple of reasons. While no airplanes of this size would operate out of Mustang, it's been continuously argued that the problem with aircraft wildlife strikes, and wildlife strikes is the official terminology, are large numbers of small birds being ingested into the jet engines and causing accidents similar to what brought down U.S. Air Flight 1549 in the Hudson. Since these types of jets won't be operating out of Mustang, there's no problem, right? Next slide, please. Well, that's incorrect. Another component of these wildlife strikes are large birds hitting small propeller-driven aircraft. This is probably the greater safety hazard given the lighter construction, limited redundancy of systems, and generally single-pilot operations of these types of aircraft. It's important to note that Sacramento International Airport, only about 30 miles from Mustang, has the largest number of reported wildlife strikes in the state of California. I emphasize reported because throughout the process, Great emphasis has been placed on the fact that there have been no reported wildlife strikes at Mustang and few, if any, at nearby similarly sized airports. This is a bit disingenuous, however, as the FAA only requires reporting at large airports serving commercial passengers, hence that is where most of the data comes from. Additionally, the U.S. Department of Agriculture, which also has jurisdiction over wildlife strikes, has stated that only approximately 20% of strikes are reported, period. So a very limited pool of data on these smaller airports. Next slide, please. Another issue that's been brought up is the idea that since propeller aircraft are supposedly noisier than other aircraft, the birds can hear them sooner and fly out of the way. On its face, it's preposterous, but there's actually data to disprove that. And I just throw this up here because typically a piston engine aircraft that would operate out of Mustang has a noise range of about 51 to 76 decibels. This is a Sikorsky UH-60 helicopter, which has a noise range of 100 to 110 decibels, and obviously it's as susceptible to bird strikes, wildlife strikes, as any other aircraft moving through the air. Next slide, please. Now, the environmental concerns. The preserve has been created for the specific purpose of attracting large numbers of birds, both common and threatened species. And I want to emphasize, my CEQA expert pointed out to me a little while ago that the calendar item says endangered, but we are actually talking about threatened species under the CEQA guidelines. A significant investment of public resources has been made to further the purpose of attracting these birds. Next slide, please. One of the largest rookeries in Sacramento County is located less than a quarter mile from the end of the runway at Mustang. Next slide, please. Here is the rookery during nesting season. I'm not a birder, but I believe these are cranes. Next slide, please. Here are the FAA guidelines that would control operations at Mustang Airport. The two key distances to note are 5,000 feet from wildlife areas and 5-mile radius from the airport in the upper paragraph. And in the second paragraph, if land use practice creates a wildlife hazard, the FAA encourages the airport operator to take steps to control the wildlife hazard. What the problem is the FAA can step in at any time, find that the wildlife that the preserve is designed to attract is in fact a hazard to operations at Mustang Airport. This in turn can lead to everything from measures to drive wildlife away from the location to actually killing wildlife that is considered a hazard to flight operations. In fact, and I believe you have a copy of this document, a wildlife assessment of Mustang Airport was made by the USDA in 2008, and it recommends the airport, quote, combine harassment techniques with a lethal shooting program, unquote. Next slide, please. Here are the two radius circles around Mustang Airport, and the you can see our property falls within the greater 5-mile ring. Next slide, please. In conclusion, staff recommends adoption of the resolution opposing the Mustang Airport expansion project, primarily for public safety concerns and the concern that existing habitat restoration and future restoration would be harmed or limited by expansion of the airport. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your presentation. Any comments or questions from the commissioners?
Not now.
Okay. And I will reserve as well. So thank you for your presentation.
Thank you.
It's now time for public comment, and hopefully we have these correct. if they're not, it's probably my fault. I believe we've got support first, and I've got a Dan Taylor. Dan, are you still in the room? Excellent. The microphone's yours. Welcome. This is support of the calendar item.
Chair and members of the State Lands Commission, I'm Dan Taylor, Public Policy Director for Audubon, California, and we're here to support strongly the recommendation of staff on this item. And I think Mr. Milstein did an excellent job providing the overview. I agree with everything you said except one thing. Those were not cranes. Those were American egrets and great blue herons. But the point stands that these are large birds that as a pilot, one would not want to encounter in a flight or in a takeoff situation. You will be hearing from other speakers to attest to the significant conservation benefit and value that the Cosumnes River Preserve is providing. We agree with those statements in advance. This is one of the Western Hemisphere's most important areas for birds, been the object and topic of significant study. So we support strongly those recommendations. My specific comment that I would like to make actually has to do with public safety. As Mr. Milstein indicated, Flight 1549 that went down on the in the Hudson, only days before that accident occurred, the Sacramento County Board of Supervisors authorized their staff to proceed with an effort to change the Fish and Game Code to allow for greater accommodations for public safety through the take of wildlife that presented a risk to the flying public. We engaged with the late Senator Cox in that effort, and while it was we all agreed with the need for public safety as a tantamount concern, there were some significant issues that needed to be resolved. We did so, and we think reached an accommodation which does provide further protections to the flying public while reducing the obvious risk to birds from a depredation standpoint. But all of us around the table realized that what we were doing is improving on a dangerous situation, that in the airport bird strike business, it's all about location. And since we're not changing the location of Sacramento International Airport, it made sense to try to work hard together to accommodate those fears and to make additional changes, which we did. Which brings us to Mustang Airport and our belief that the best way to avoid a future accident and tragedy is to simply not allow the expansion of this facility in this very, very problematic location. So from a conservation standpoint and a public safety standpoint, we strongly support the staff recommendation. Thank you.
Thank you, Dan.
Thank you.
I appreciate you heeding the warning lights there. And we're going to alternate if we don't have an objection from the commissioners. Alternate on
no
these.
Positions,
excellent.
Sure.
Jim Harnish. Jim, are you still in the room?
I am.
Thank you, Jim. The microphone's yours.
Good afternoon, commissioners. My name is Jim Harnish. I would like to defer my comments until our team has a chance to make a presentation. We have a PowerPoint presentation that Diane Kinderman would like to present, if that would be okay.
The proponents of the.
Yeah, if you'd like to aggregate your time to make a presentation, that's fine.
That'd be perfect.
Are there others in this list, Jim? I've got Paul Raveling, Diane Kinderman.
Correct.
And Brian Holloway.
Correct.
Are all of those?
The Brian and Diane are the two primary presenters.
Okay. So Paul is not part of your group?
No.
All right. So the three of you will be aggregating your time.
Correct.
Do we want to do that now? Let's do it now if we're ready.
Okay.
Sure.
Good. Thank you.
Thank you, commissioners. My name is Diane Kinderman with the law firm of Abbott and Kinderman here in Sacramento, California. And with me is Brian Holloway, land use expert and planning expert. That was Jim Harnish who was speaking as well. He also is a land use and planning expert. And also with us, we have Diane Moore of Moore Biological to speak to some extent on the wildlife hazard issue. Our presentation, although we're splitting it up among the four of us, it will not be much longer than that was presented by the support for the opposite for the resolution, so we'll be similar.
Okay. Good afternoon, commissioners. Brian Holloway. I'm a land use professional planner in Sacramento, representing Mustang. The board here is kind of low school here. That is the existing Mustang airfield. As you can see, it's a landing strip and one hangar.
And we need you to stay on the microphone.
I'll get a shot.
Okay.
We have it hold for you.
If you stand behind, I think we can see.
Our PowerPoint photos were large, and they didn't quite cooperate as we anticipated.
Okay.
We apologize.
I can live without that one. I guess we can go to the first PowerPoint slide. Do I do that?
I can take care of it for
you. Okay, great. Okay, this is the proposal. And as you can see, the white area in the middle is the existing runway widened. There's a yellow area to the west, which is a lengthening of the runway. And the reason that's done is to allow the planes to land further towards the center of the property and away from the farms that are to the east. So, and then also you can see that there are some taxiways. And up at the upper right-hand corner of the airfield, you can see the proposed hangars, 60 on the right and 40 to the left with some tie-downs in the middle. Now, one thing I would want to mention is earlier you saw the photographs of the Nature Conservancy properties to the north of the hangars there, to the west. That's great. Thank you. And then to the south a little bit. I'd like to go up to the rectangle in the northwest corner of the photograph to the left. Yeah, the left. just to the right. That 90 acres, you can see that there's a strip right through the center. That is a channelized creek, where the creek is natural on the left, is natural on the right. And the Nature Conservancy wanted to buy that property and acquire it in order to naturalize that strip as well. That 90 acres was owned by Mr. Bielan, the owner of the airfield. The Nature Conservancy approached him and asked to buy that for obvious reasons, and he agreed to do that. And in spite of what Mr. Milstein said, there were verbal agreements made that if they sold that land and it was sold less than prices, agricultural prices, they got a discount on it. The Nature Conservancy would be neutral on the expansion plans that they were aware of for the airfield. So I just wanted to put that in the record. Next slide, please. Okay, as mentioned, the airfield has been in operation since 1990, approximately 3 to 4 flights per day. This is an interesting thing. The operation is a takeoff or a landing, so it's kind of double counted as opposed to a trip, you know, to the grocery store and back, which counts as one. Again, a large hangar with 6 planes in it and existing paved runway. Apologize for my voice. It's allergies. Next slide. As Mr. Milstein pointed out, this is the proposal, is to widen the runway, lengthen it, and add hangars. And really the purpose of the airfield is to provide, in essence, a mini storage for planes. The idea is not to have a very active airfield, and that's why we have so many restrictions on our operations. The idea here is to provide hangar space, which I'll get to in just a minute. Next slide. We conducted a hangar study in the Sacramento region, and we looked at a number of hangars and airfields in the area that were still operating. And as you can see, they almost all have hangars. Franklin Field to the west really can't expand hangars because it's in a major flood zone, and that's why they only have 8, and they're actually portable hangars. All of these airfields that currently exist have basically multi-year waiting lists to get a hangar. What we were told by most of the airfield operators was that there was a 10-year waiting list in order to get a hangar. And the reason for this is the fact that Sacramento County has lost or shut down 3 general aviation airports in the county, and basically only two remain that are operational. Sunset is in the process of being closed at the Board of Supervisors' requirements.
All right, Mr. Hollywood, you've heard me ask this question before, but I want to give the other
questions
commissioners...
Questions are fine, anytime.
Oh, great, because it's just about this slide.
Sure.
I want to give the other commissioners an opportunity to check in with you about it. Can you tell us about the hangar study, the way it was conducted?
The way it was conducted was on 2 separate occasions in the last year and a half, my office either called or met with the operators of the airfields, and we found out how many hangars they had in existence, if they had any planned, how many tie downs they had, and what their waiting, were all the hangars filled, and was there a waiting list? And then we went out to the local Air Pilots Association. We met with them on numerous occasions, and they completely validated what the airport operators were saying, was that we need hangars, our planes are sitting out and being exposed to the elements. Next slide, please. This is an important slide because what this shows is it shows you the kinds of planes that are at those other regional airfields in Sacramento. And I want to point out to you, especially I'm going to be talking about Franklin Field in a couple minutes. You'll notice that Franklin has approximately 120 flights per day. And if you look at Mustang at full build out, we would be at 40 flights per day. So the existing Franklin Field it actually operates at three times the intensity that Mustang would. And I'll get into why that's an issue in just a moment. Next slide, please. As it was mentioned, the application for this additional expansion of the airfield was filed in 1997. There were two mitigated negative decks performed by the County of Sacramento, and Ms. Kinderman decided with the county that really an EIR needed to be completed for the project, and a full environmental impact report was done for the project. I've been doing development projects for over 30 years, and I've never had an environmental impact report on any project that I've ever done where there were no significant impacts. In this particular case, this airfield's expansion, as studied many times by the county, basically there are no significant impacts and no override is required. The final EIR is now basically complete. And one of the things that's important about this airfield is there is a demand for it and there is appreciation for it in the community. Sacramento County has community planning advisory councils, which are basically neighborhood folks who are appointed by the Board of Supervisors to provide recommendations on all land use projects in their neighborhood. And the two community planning advisory councils that overlap the airfield both unanimously approved this project after two hearings each. The Planning Commission held several, the County Planning Commission held several hearings on the project. The Planning Commission unanimously approved the project over their staff recommendations. The County Parks Commission, their staff was recommending against it because County Parks co-owns lands with the Nature Conservancy. And the Parks Commission, on a split vote without a quorum, overruled their staff and again endorsed the project. The Nature Conservancy appealed the project to the Board of Supervisors, and we go before them on the 3rd of May. Next slide, please. As I mentioned, the final EIR is complete, and there are no significant impacts. And that's important to think about what Mr. Milstein said and what he pointed out in his presentation, that the true statistical comprehensive analysis, the environmental analysis, found no significant impacts. The project is consistent with the county general plan and its zoning, and 140 acres of the 160 acres, it's a 160-acre site, only 20 acres will actually be used for airport facilities. The 140 acres will remain in agriculture, and it's not within a Williamson Act. Next slide. So just to go to your staff and the Nature Conservancy's concern, there are no wildlife hazards. The FAA guidelines that were mentioned do not apply here at all. And county staff, I believe, has agreed with us finally because the FAA guidelines apply to federally financed airports. This will not be a federally financed airport in any way, and so those guidelines do not apply. One thing I would like to mention is that there are 80 airports, 80 general aviation airports in California that are within 0 to 5 miles of federally designated state ecologically sensitive areas, and 69 of those are within 2 miles of environmental hazard, environmental habitat areas, and 11 within 5 miles. Next slide. Next slide. Okay. You'll remember that I mentioned Franklin Airfield. What this is a picture of is the Nature Conservancy headquarters, which I'm not sure how to do this. There it is. I don't know who's doing that, but they're really good. Thank you, Bob. Thank you. That's the Nature Conservancy headquarters, and you can see it sits smack dab in what's obviously incredible habitat area. In fact, this is where the Nature Conservancy took the park commissioners and the planning commissioners and said, can you see an airport here? And of course, sitting in that location, you could imagine what their response was. If you go up to the right a little bit on the other side of all that water, you will see Franklin Airfield. Franklin Airfield is a county airfield that is located adjacent to the Nature Conservancy Preserve. In fact, their runways point at the Nature Conservancy headquarters. So you can see that this particular airport, in immediate proximity to incredible wildlife habitat, bird sanctuary, is not complained about. The Nature Conservancy says that this particular airport, which operates at three times what Mustang would operate at, which includes crop dusters carrying pesticides and fertilizers over the habitat areas, is not a problem. They have no concerns with it at all. It's a good neighbor. Next slide, please. Again, this is in the foreground, additional wetlands area for wildlife. And then just right on the other side of that is Franklin Field. Nature Conservancy headquarters is over here by my hand. Next slide, please. This is a picture of Franklin Field, and you can see how close it is to all that habitat, existing incredible habitat with the Nature Conservancy headquarters right in front. Again, not a problem here. Next slide. This is Mustang. Where's the habitat? This is a problem for the Nature Conservancy. We don't understand what this is about. It's pretty obvious why the county found no significant environmental impacts with this particular project. Next slide, please. The Nature Conservancy claims that Mustang will be a hazard to the habitat area that they controlled. What's interesting is that the Nature Conservancy owns and operates a general aviation airport in the middle of a nature preserve that they control and operate in Edgartown, Massachusetts. It's called Katama Airfield, and you can see here that it's owned and operated by the Nature Conservancy. No problems here. In fact, the fact that this airfield operates simultaneous with and in conformance with the habitat area is not a problem to the Nature Conservancy. Diane? Want to address that?
Sure. Thank you, Brian. I appreciate that. Yeah, so as Brian indicated, if you look at the quote, we're on this one, it just says it's under the combined control of the town of Edgartown and Nature Conservancy, home to 26 rare or endangered species of plants and fauna. It's a destination for thousands of persons who travel to Martha's Vineyard by private airplane. And if you go on to the next slide, please, here's a picture of Katama Airport and the beach. You can fly right up to the beach, 100 feet from the beach you can land and have a picnic on the beach, and in spite of this incredible habitat, they do not perceive a land use conflict as they do with Mustang Airfield. There are actually three landing strips at Katama. Next slide is just some more information about the Airfield Trust, once again, it just provides more information. I don't want to take up more of your time with that. The next slide is just another photograph, another viewpoint of the Katama airstrips there. There's the beach. And then the following slide is a map of Martha's Vineyard, Chappaquiddick Island. And if you look at the south, between item number 0 and M, at the very bottom of there it is. That's Katama Airfield and all that water around it. And yet the Nature Conservancy supports that while they do not support Mustang Airfield, which is a small business, which would benefit the community. And then the final slide on Katama, the second last slide, it just shows that Katama Airfield is actually a conservation district. It's both. And this is from the Town of Edgartown Planning Board. And then one more slide on Katama. It indicates it has, this is from Wikipedia, it indicates it has three runways and averages 22 flights per day. So If we have one more moment, I wanted Diane Moore just to come forward and speak on the issue of a conflict with the habitat and the rookery. She actually conducted a few studies out at the rookery. Would we have a moment to do that before we wrap up?
I would ask whoever's keeping time right now to give us a heads up on whether or not we've used the consolidated time of three people. So that would be, we've already extended your time.
All right. Well, thank you. So we won't have Diane Moore come forward, but we'll be available to answer any questions. And then there's just one final slide. It's our fact and fiction slide, and we've provided you with copies of this. You're welcome to look at that. We're very aware, most recently in a meeting as recent as December of 2009, the Nature Conservancy told us that they would like the applicant simply to sell him the land. And we know that the Nature Conservancy is one of their businesses is purchasing up private land and selling it at a profit to regulatory agencies. And we are assuming that's maybe what's going on here. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your presentation. Next on our list is Mike Connor, I believe. Diane Moore was with you, correct? Was supposed to be with the last presenter. Yes. Mike Connor, are you still in the room? Excellent. The microphone's yours, sir. Welcome.
My name is Mike Connor. I'm with the Nature Conservancy. I'm a senior project director with our organization. I would like to first thank you for hearing our perspective on the Mustang Airport this afternoon. I'd like to state on the onset that the Nature Conservancy does not oppose, nor has it ever, the present permitted use of the Mustang landing strip. however, we do oppose the proposed expanded use and therefore support the resolution at hand. The existing use entails up to three operations per day, that's per the permit. And in contrast, the proposed permit would entail, according to Sacramento County Airport System, 40 operations a day. That's over 13-fold multiplication there. Excuse me. Then the TNC believes that we believe the expansion will inevitably lead to conflicts between wildlife and airplanes, posing a threat to human safety and adversely impacting the numerous and diverse birds of the preserve. It's not just the Nature Conservancy that believes this. In 2007, a division of the USDA came out and did a one-day survey, and with the result of this initial consultation being wildlife hazards are present at Mustang Airport with significant wildlife hazards during the early morning hours. They also go on to make the recommendation about measures to be taken to mitigate this risk, including vegetation management, implementation of a wildlife harassment program that includes pyrotechnics and all, and also a lethal shooting program. Not only will such a situation adversely impact wildlife, it undermines a significant public investment, roughly $150 million in public and private funds made on the preserve. Some of these funds include state and federal mitigation funds on areas, including areas that touch the Mustang Airport property. The preserve has been recognized as a globally important birding area. So here we have created, starting in 1984, including buying 4,800 acres around the airport, adjacent to touching the airport, before Dick Bielan ever filed his permit. We purchased all this property to attract birds, okay? The expanded airport use is an incompatible use with this. Here we are attracting birds and then putting in an expanded airport. It doesn't work for me. I think that there's a human and wildlife safety hazard associated with that.
I'd ask you to wrap it up. Your time is up, and I have one question for you.
Okay. Let me touch Full market value was paid for the property. We have the records to show that. We contacted both Lodi and Mather Airports. Lodi said they have 15 hangars available. Mather says they have 20. They've said this for the past year. As far as Franklin Airport goes, those photographs, the nearest Nature Conservancy wetlands were over a mile away from the actual end of the runway at Franklin.
Thank you for your sure. comments. I didn't want you to get away from the microphone. There was an assertion made in the previous presentation that there was some kind of verbal or agreement made between the parties, and since it was made, I'd like
sure.
the Conservancy to address
we
that.
We have heard this a lot, and we have gone to the project director and the deal doer of that time and have statements on record with the County Board of Supervisors stating that's untrue. Also, I'll leave it at that.
I'd just like to say that the law provides that transactions dealing with real property have to be in writing, otherwise they're not binding.
That's correct. Any other comments from the commissioners while we've got the Conservancy here?
Yeah, I just have one question. Did you say that there is a plan to use a lethal bird control?
There was a recommendation
program?
By Wildlife Services, which is a division of the USDA, in 2007. Mm-hmm. They went out and did a one-day assessment, and yes, there is a recommendation to use lethal control as one management technique for the. And this was the airport in its present operation of three operations per day, not the expanded use.
Okay.
And we've got one more presenter from the Conservancy, so if we've got additional
okay.
questions.
I want to ask you one question.
Sure.
I asked the previous presenters. I asked the previous presenters. They said they made calls to the nearby airports, and there's a 10-year waiting list. But you said something different. Can you tell me more about that?
I have statements. Actually, they're on file with the Sacramento County Board of Supervisors. I can provide them to you. I don't have hard copies with me. I do have them on a computer from the owners or managers of both Mather and Lodi that have said since last April, we have Lodi has 15 spots. Lodi is within 5 or 6 miles of the Mustang location. And Mather Air Force Base says they have 20. Also, the airport operator at Lodi said that there is plenty of hangar capacity in the Sacramento region, and that is in that letter.
Okay, so you have something
do.
In writing,
everything
you're saying?
Everything that I've stated here, I have in writing.
Thank you.
Including the price.
Thank you.
Yeah.
At this time, without objection, we're going to take a... Do you want to take a five-minute break?
No.
Okay, well, let's keep going.
120 seconds. Can we do that? I'm sorry.
Take a two-minute break so we can switch out and get the real chair in here. Thank you.
Very quick.
All right.
This works.
It works.
I appreciate it. Thank you, everybody, for I can't say indulging us because you really were indulging me, so I'll take responsibility personally for my tardiness. And I apologize for getting in the middle of this critical issue, at least from my perspective. I did get some update on some of the public comment that already has been provided. We have, I think, four remaining speakers on this item, and I would like to ask that Betsy Wieland come up in support of our calendar item number 74. And then we'll move quickly to ask Paul Reveling to come up after Betsy, and then Pablo Garza to be prepared to come after that.
Can I move this?
Pull that right down.
Pull it right down.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. My name is Betsy Wieland, and I'm here with Save the American River Association. And before everybody goes, whoops, wrong river. Ron, you're here on the wrong river. I have to say au contraire. The Save the American River Association is currently involved in directing efforts to realize the California Heartland Project and also the grassroots working group effort to rescue our regional parks and open space. The Cosumnes River Preserve is integral to these legacies. I hope to be able to leave the room today and be able to go back to the community we serve, the schools, the organizations, the individuals we speak to, and tell them that our State Lands Commission, number one, respects the public trust. When they take public monies and invest them, they are serious about making sure those investments realize their full potential, that those investments are protected and they're valued. And number two, I hope the Lands Commission realizes, because we cannot have the constituency who really needs to speak here in the room, and that is the birds that we're talking about, because they can't come here, we need to be that voice. We need to realize that we are not just talking about just birds, okay? These birds are valued members of our community here in Sacramento. We are on the Pacific Flyway. We are internationally important. We hold tremendous responsibility to the rest of the world to see that these populations thrive and are protected. Locally, these birds mean everything to our economy, health, and well-being. I ask the Commission to please, on behalf of Save the American River Association and the other organizations and individuals and groups that we interact with, to please, please support staff resolution. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much, and appreciate that, Ms. Wieland. And again, Paul, thank you.
Well, I'm Paul Reveling from El Dorado Hills, and I'm actually in the wrong category. As a retired software engineer, I'd like to note that the question of in support did not specify in support of the project or in support of the recommendation.
No. So recorded.
Yes. To introduce myself, I can sort of approach this wearing three hats. One is as someone who has always had a strong affinity for birds, and the iconic moment for that probably was that the first date between the young lady who became my wife and me was the 6th annual Condor Watch at Mount Pinos in the Los Angeles area. On another side of the coin, as I said, I'm a software engineer. I'm somewhat of a generalist, but that combination always means being highly analytical, especially when it's possible to be mathematically analytical. And somewhere in the middle of that, I'm a sailplane pilot, which is sort of like being a junior soaring bird, but the soaring birds are better at it than the humans are, and the soaring birds are magnificently equipped in both their aerodynamics and their piloting skills. Usually the soaring pilot, on days when lift is scarce, we'll look for soaring birds to join up with them in a thermal because the birds can find them better. And frankly, one of the most thrilling experiences of my flying history was when, for the first time, a red-tailed hawk joined up with me in my thermal. Normally, the the soaring birds keep at least 200 feet away from sailplanes in that kind of soaring. When the hawk joined up with me, it overflew my cockpit 8 feet above the canopy, and it was an impressive sight. With respect to there's a lot of fear and belief where what you need is facts. And the facts are that not many people have addressed the question of why do bird strikes happen. And I'm also speaking as a former physics major, by the way. And there are two main reasons which have nothing to do with most of the things that have been talked about. One is the speed of aircraft. Speed is very much a factor, and I could give you a mathematical relationship for that if I had time to bring in a graph. The other is cross-sectional area of the aircraft in question, which is why Sacramento International has 1,800 bird strikes, while the South County area with nothing but light general aviation aircraft logged only two in that database. An interesting case to identify what factors are effective is Mather. At Mather, there have been only two light general aviation bird strikes, light general aviation meaning single engine piston powered, and far more. I don't have the statistics with me, but I believe about 50 in the 20 years of the FAA database for other types of aircraft, including commercial, military, and larger general aviation, such as light twins.
Mr. Reveling, the light has turned red. If you can wrap up your comments, we'd be grateful.
Okay. I don't have time now to say more. I would like to have substantive conversation with anyone who's willing. You're welcome to contact me. You can find my website at www.sierrafoot.org and an email contact there. I would enjoy showing anyone what it's like at Cameron Air Park, which is essentially a good model for what Mustang would become.
Right.
And perhaps driving through the area around the Mustang Airport.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Pablo Garza. And followed, and this is the last card I have. Anyone else wishes to speak, certainly afford you the opportunity. Jennifer Fearing. Thank you, Mr. Garza.
Thank you, and good afternoon. My name is Pablo Garza. I'm Associate Director of State Policy and External Affairs for the Nature Conservancy. You've already heard from my colleague Mike Connor, the Senior Project Director, and stating our support of the staff recommendation. I'll use my time to kind of rebut some of the points made by the project proponents. The business of whether or not there was a deal when the Nature Conservancy purchased the 90 acres from Mr. Bielan, there was no deal. There's no documentation. We've been in touch with staff, Mike Eaton and Chris Uncle, who handled that transaction. I've signed letters with me today. Unfortunately, I don't have copies for you. They said there was no verbal agreement and there's no written agreement. I don't know why that keeps coming up, but we continue to refute that fact. Second, they referenced the December 2009 meeting. I was there present, where they said the Nature Conservancy expressed interest in purchasing Mr. Bielan's property. I was there. That never came up. That is not our interest. That is not our intent. Thirdly, Mr. Holloway talked about the existing permitted use of Mustang Airfield. And we've continually said we do not oppose the existing use. It's a limited, personal use, privately operated airport. We are okay with that. The permit is for three operations a day. And so an operation is a takeoff, and a landing is a second operation. So it's 1.5 round trips a day. Mr. Holloway said it is 6.5 flights per day. I don't know where that he got that. I have the use permit right here, and this is the county use permit from 1990. It's three operations a day, and our observations of staff and anecdotal conversations with neighbors, it's actually significantly less than that. Thirdly, much was made about the Katama Airfield that allegedly the Nature Conservancy is involved with. I'll say that is from 1924. The Nature Conservancy was founded in 1951. We did not establish that airport. We are organized by state chapters, so I do not have a lot of knowledge of on-the-ground facts, Katama Airfield, so I will gather those. What I can speak to is we also have three other airstrips on Nature Conservancy properties in the country, and I was on the phone this morning with our Arlington, Virginia office in talking to the woman who runs our insurance policy. And one is in Texas and two are in Santa Cruz Island, and these are graded dirt strips. They have very limited use, And if this is what we were talking about at Mustang, we would be we wouldn't be here today. If what they were proposing was comparable, for example, to what we have at Santa Cruz Island, we would not be here in opposition. We were okay with that. And I think that more importantly, the point isn't whether or not the Nature Conservancy operates or has airstrips on its properties. We're talking about this specific location, whether or not it makes sense to put a publicly serving airport and dramatically expand the use, its existing use, in the heart of an area that sees so much wildlife and bird use. It looks like I have a red light.
Yes.
thank you for your time, and I'll be available to answer any questions if you have
any. Mr. Garza, we have a question for you.
Yes.
Mike, Cindy.
The proponents of the airport said that the Nature Conservancy is in the business to buy land and then sell it at a profit to regulatory agencies. Can you comment on that? Is that what Nature Conservancy is in the business of doing?
No, I would dispute that very strongly. And I think what it is true that many times we access public and private funds to purchase properties that have high ecological and conservation values. And in many instances, we do then turn around and transfer them to a regulatory agency for the long-term management. And I think more than anything, this is because, frankly, I know you guys are public officials, but Nature Conservancy moves a little more quickly than a lot of public agencies. And we're able to do deals as opportunities arise in a more efficient and fast manner. And frankly, we work in a lot of very conservative areas, and especially in the Central Valley in this state. And we work with agricultural communities and well-received, and a lot of folks are more comfortable working with a private organization than with a federal or state regulatory agency. So we are not in the business of boondoggling or whatever. We're here to protect biodiversity, and we use a science-based approach to identify high-value areas, and we do partner with public agencies frequently, but it's not to, get some special deal. That's preposterous. So
are you a nonprofit agency? They said that you're in the business to profit.
Well, yeah, fair enough. We are a private nonprofit charitable organization, 501c3 organized. So we could not profit on this.
Thank you, Mr. Garza.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Ms. Ferry, thank you. And followed the final speaker card I have. Again, if you wish to speak, please let Kimberly know is Rick Fowler.
Hi, Lieutenant Governor and others. My name is Jennifer Fearing. I'm here on behalf of the Humane Society of the United States. We're the nation's largest animal protection organization, and we have more than 1.3 million members and supporters in California. And we have submitted letters to the County Board of Supervisors here on this issue, as well had a letter run in the Sacramento Bee. I thought I would just read that, since that'll definitely be brief. We believe expanding the airport is a bad idea, bad for people, bad for birds, and bad for the environment. The Humane Society opposes this plan out of concern for the birds whose habitat and lives would be irreparably changed by an airport extension, but also because of the pressing issue of public safety. Birds and aircraft do not mix. To expand flight operations in an area that serves as a preserve, especially one designed to attract birds, makes absolutely no sense to those of us at the Humane Society. We're glad to see the State Lands Commission considering weighing in on this issue, and we're grateful for your attention to the matter. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Mr. Fowler? And again, anyone else that wishes to speak that hasn't filled out a card, please do so. And otherwise, Mr. Fowler, you'll be the last public comment.
Commissioners, thank you very much. I'm Rick Fowler, currently serving as president and CEO of the Community College Foundation. And before that, I had served three terms as a Sacramento County Project Planning Commissioner. And our commission has heard countless hours of testimony on Mustang Airport. And unlike the editorial board of the Sacramento Bee and many of the people in the room who may have just come as a result of hearing that something bad was going to happen to environmentally sensitive lands, we've heard the testimony. We've seen the environmental impact studies. We deemed them adequate and complete. And every time that this issue appeared before the commission, it was voted overwhelmingly or unanimously in favor of Mustang Airport. I have some personal experience in that I myself have an airline transport pilot rating, and I've also run an airport in Illinois, a major facility in an environmentally sensitive area. I'm very familiar with the compatibility and use, And our commission had to consider the closing of Sunset Sky Ranch Airport nearby in South County. And at the time that that closure was being urged by many people, as development in Elk Grove began to get closer and closer to that airport, which served a general aviation community in that area, many of the pilots came and testified before our commission about how many years the waiting list was for hangar space. Things you've heard about hangar space at today's hearing are flat incorrect. Some of the facilities named are tie-downs only, not hangars. There is a long wait for hangar space. It is inadequate in Sacramento County. And these people that were basically will be run off from Sunset Sky Ranch. When our commission voted to close that, the relief that staff, county staff urged was that this Mustang Airport would be coming along and be a relief for it. And now that Sunset Sky Ranch has been voted to close, the forces are at work to say, now we got to also prevent this from doing what the county staff and others had talked about, Mustang being able to serve the South County General Aviation. The fact that it is in a remote area is actually in favor of the compatibility of the use, and it is a very light, small aircraft, you know, very light impact on the adjacent uses. And the environmental impact statements that the airport owner has paid millions of dollars to do have all shown the compatibility. So I urge the commission to do the right thing and not oppose Mustang Airport. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Fowler. Thank you for your comments.
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to transmit a request from the attorney for Mustang Airport who would like you to consider giving her time to rebut, but that's up to your discretion.
Yeah, and I think I personally, considering my tardiness, would appreciate that, and I think there'll be some questions as well from commissioners, so it may be opportunistic. So please come on up.
Thank you, commissioners. Would you like to ask questions first, or I just have two comments
on items
raised?
Make the comments, and I think we'll ask the questions.
All right, thank you. First of all, on the Lodi Airport, the phone call made regarding the available space, those are tie-downs. Mr. Fowler referred to that. That is not hangar space, and small general aviation pilots are looking for their own individual hangar space. In terms of the Mather Airport availability, there is no availability there of individual hangar space. It's one large hangar where they would all park together, and most small general aviation pilots do not want to fly in and out of Mather among FedEx jets and what have you. It isn't the type of traffic that they want. They're looking for a small place to go on the weekend, work on their planes, socialize, and have a private area to keep their planes. So those items are incorrect. And once again, I know this isn't, you know, you're more concerned about land use compatibility, but once again, both Mr. Holloway and I sat in a meeting, and Mr. Winternitz of the Nature Conservancy said, why doesn't Mr. Biel and just sell us his land? And I would testify to that under penalty of perjury.
No, I appreciate that. We have any questions?
I wanted to ask Mr. Milstein a couple of questions, and then perhaps
should I wait?
Mr. Milstein.
Yeah, please.
Come on up. Thank you.
And Mr. Chairman, before he does mention that, I would like to make one comment regarding the appeal that was made last year of the Planning Commission's actions. It was mentioned that the Nature Conservancy made that appeal. It was actually made by 12 different entities, 10 NGOs, as well as the Department of Fish and Game and the State Lands Commission. So it wasn't just the Nature Conservancy appealing the action.
Okay. Mr. Milstein, thank you.
Okay, again, good afternoon, commissioners. I'm the senior staff counsel assigned to this case.
Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Milstein, there was some mention about the EIR having no significant impacts. Can you tell us if you've looked at the EIR, or perhaps other staff has looked at the EIR, and what are your thoughts about the EIR?
Well, I basically, one of the issues we would challenge in litigation is the validity of the EIR. So, I don't want to go into any detail and violate any kind of confidence, but we see a lot of problems with the substance and the procedure followed with the EIR.
I was going to ask the same question, but because of the staff's comments in the analysis that said numerous flaws with the entitlement process and the environmental review. So
I can try and address a little bit of that. Certainly a year ago when we were going through this process, we were a little more in tune on it. We had hoped that our actions at that time would have had a better effect. First of all, the commission staff did not receive notice of this action being taken by the county until the final EIR came. So there's a number, as Eric said, a number of procedural complaints that the commission made to the county in regard to how the notice was made in that document. There's also a significant number of inadequacies we pointed out in the environmental document dealing, failing to analyze information that was available, as well as new information that had come in during the draft stage. So along with the other appellants to the, of the Planning Commission action, there were numerous both procedural and substantive matters as the EIR was drafted, and that is actually the action the commission previously authorized us to file suit on, was to challenge the EIR if necessary. Okay. There's been a lot of confusion at the county level as well as to who actually had the authority to take the actions. There's issues about whether the Planning Commission had any jurisdiction at all given this airport, and whether or not other bodies would also have to approve some of this given the myriad legal standards that come into effect giving dealing with airports. There's even the State Department of or Caltrans Division of Aeronautics that has jurisdiction on some of these projects. So there was just a lot of unanswered questions, but and I think our documents that the commission has previously filed with the Board of Supervisors elaborate on those. Okay. But I unless our CEQA expert who's here today would like to present some additional ones, we can
That's fine. It gave me a flavor for what the issues are. And then last question I have is, I hear the conflict of increased business there. I hear the proponent of the project say minimal increase, yet I'm hearing at the same time a huge demand for more hangars, more tie downs. And so that kind of conflicts with me. Is there minimal increased activity or a significant increase in activity that's going to happen there? And was that?
No, I mean, yeah. I think you're onto a good point. It's two separate issues, clearly, but the level of activity, if there's that much of a demand for hangar space, which I think again the Nature Conservancy made clear that they dispute that there is hangar space available in the county. If there is that greater demand, then you know, I think logically you'd see a greater amount of use at Mustang. And as I said, the county, you know, there's a lot of numbers floating around, and part of the confusion is, you know, is it an event, is it a takeoff, or is it a landing? So sometimes you're multiplying times two, sometimes you're dividing by two. But you know, the numbers that the applicant has asked for are self-imposed limitations, and again, the county made clear that they can't enforce that. So, and the number they have in their documentation is upwards of 15,000 flights a year, which would be pretty significant, very significant.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, one more question, Eric. Sorry. So, you indicated that you're a former U.S. Navy pilot.
A flight officer, yes.
Flight officer. I've heard a couple of pilots get up here supporting the expansion of the airport. Can you just give us your opinion?
Okay, my personal opinion. I love airplanes. I spent my whole, you know, most of my life around hangars and airfields. I love airplanes. Go to the air shows. I'm one of those kind of geeks. But this is just a bad location. This is not, you know, you have a huge, whether it's a private airplane or a commercial airplane, you have a big piece of metal moving through the sky, and birds don't get out of the way. I mean, you know, sometimes they do if you're lucky, sometimes they don't. And it's like driving down the highway and thinking that the bugs aren't going to hit your windshield. I mean, it's the same, similar analogy. So I love airports. I'd love to see another airport, you know, if there's a demand, which we question. I mean, that, you know, another airport would be great. This is just a poor location. Right next to a preserve, designed to attract something that an airplane's going to fly into, whether, you know, whether the bird tries to get out of the way or the pilot tries to avoid the bird, what have you. It's going to happen. It just, you know, it's physics or whatever you want to call it.
Any additional questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Do you want to just, because you're standing there so patiently, any final comments?
You've been very gracious with your time. Thank you. Well, I also wanted to add, there was just mention of a USDA gentleman out on the site identifying a menu of options in the event that there were an issue with birds, but that is a menu of options that's provided to all airports in the event that there's a wildlife conflict, which there has not been at this airport during its 20-year tenure. There have been no bird strikes, and there have been none at similarly at Franklin Field. Well, actually, there was one since 1955. It's been in operation since 1955. So there has been activity at this airport. The EIR did not mix the numbers. People who are familiar with aviation understand the difference between an operation and a flight, and we don't believe it's confusing. But thank you for your time. We appreciate it. If you don't have any further questions.
One second, we may have one.
So is Franklin, there was some confusion, is Franklin required to report or not required to report? I understood that they're not required to report under law.
Well, I don't know whether or not they're required to report, but we do know there is one reported bird strike out there. But if they're not reported, how do you know? How are you assuming they would occur? Is my response to that.
Thank you.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much.
We appreciate your time.
Thank you. And just, Curtis, if you could just sum up again the staff recommendation and perhaps just reflect on what you've heard in public session.
Sure, Mr. Chair. The commission staff on a number of occasions last year took positions on this. In fact, 2 years ago, we first commented to the county on this and the concerns that we had about the potential impacts to the preserve there, as well as potential human impacts. And of course, when we're focusing on an environmental document, first we're looking very carefully to make sure it's comply with CEQA, and we identified a number of flaws. So it wasn't just the project itself at that time, it's also the analysis that the public had to look at and the decision makers had to make their decisions. So we think there's a couple of problems with the project from that standpoint. We have taken formal positions, the commission has, and this was an attempt, I think, to bring it at a public forum where the public, both sides of the issue, could express to the commission their views, and then we could make it very clear if the commission followed the staff's recommendation to the Board of Supervisors, the strong concerns that the commission had about expanding this airport. Again, I think nobody that I've heard speak talked about closing the airport, but the significant expansion of activity at that airport we think is not in the public's interest and would violate, in fact, CEQA as it is currently this project been analyzed.
Thank you for that summary. Are there any comments before we move, and public comment now is officially closed, and any comments before we move to a motion, the commissioner? I apologize for being late, though I have followed this and gotten a great deal of information from all sides over the last few weeks. And look, I understand, you know, good people can disagree, but fundamentally it seems an enormous amount of resource and energy, human as well as financial resources, have been placed into enhancing this area in a way that clearly, from my humble perspective, is incompatible with an expansion of an airport. I know that some would argue, let the private sector decide, let the market decide. If there's a bird strike, then by definition, people will be less likely to use the airport, and the airport would fall on its own batard. I'm not willing to take that risk. It seems that this state, and seems that multiple agencies within the state, have invested an enormous amount in enhancing our natural resource, both birds and other natural resources, and it has been a huge success. And so from my perspective, at a certain point where you've got to call the question, I appreciate the Board of Supervisors will take this up. I hope we had a little more clarity and direction from the board. I know there seems to be some differences of opinion on the board and sort of an outstanding member that's poised to vote. But this member of this body is firmly of the opinion that we need to move on and the end of tyranny as opposed to tyranny without end. I'm in support of the staff recommendation, and I'm grateful for your diligence, I look forward to hearing from you a motion in support of that staff recommendation.
So, Lieutenant Governor, you summed it up very well. I don't understand why we would be pouring taxpayer dollars into this place to attract birds and then expand this airstrip into a large area. Airport with possibly, is it 15,000 flights a year?
Eric?
Okay, yeah. So I happily make the motion to adopt staff's recommendation.
And And I will second that. Again, I was more moved. The reserve started before the airport was there, and I can appreciate the owner's interest in a small airport, but I do, knowing that the preserve was started before and there have been long-term plans, I would, like I said, heartily second it, too.
There's a motion. It's seconded, and the vote in support of staff recommendation. Can I hear an aye?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. And without objection, that will be
Thank
the recommendation. Of this body in support of item number 74. We have one item formally on the calendar and then one I'd like to go back to. I guess you skipped item number 67. First, we could call now item 75, which is an update on the status of the Owens Lakebed Master Plan. And we would love to hear from staff on that.
Did we?
Oh, okay. You'll get me there. Good. There may have been others that we skipped. We'll get to them. We'll skip around. But at least let's get to 75.
Okay.
All right.
All right. Good afternoon, Chairman, Commissioners.
Thank you.
My name is Colin Connor. I'm the Assistant Chief of the Land Management Division.
Get closer to that mic so they can hear you. In this very strangely configured room. Sorry, guys.
I'm the Assistant Chief of Colin Connor, the Assistant Chief of the Land Management Division, and I'm here to give an informational update on the status of the Owens Lake Master Plan process. This is actually the third update I've given the last, prior to or last year. I realize we have two new commissioners, so I'm going to keep this general and brief in the interest of time because I know we've got another calendar item to go. Owens Lake is in Inyo County in the Eastern Sierra. You can see by the map there. It was formerly a lake. It's now dry. There's more background in the calendar item. I'm not going to go into a great deal on this. The primary driver right now is controlling the dust on the lake. The Great Basin Air Pollution Control District is tasked with controlling that. They've basically requiring the City of Los Angeles Department of Water and Power to initiate dust control measures. There's three of them right now. There's shallow flooding, gravel, and managed vegetation. This is a picture that was taken last year. There's a dust being swept up there. This is the car that we were in. It got so bad that we actually had to stop the dust. This dust is very fine, and it poses a health danger. And that's why they're trying to control the dust. So last year, January of last year, the master plan process kicked off with the hiring of a facilitator to organize the structure of the process. The facilitator is Gina Bartlett. She's with the California State University Center of Collaborative Policy. She went out and identified all the potential stakeholders, public agency, private parties, local businesses. From those, formed a planning committee, which is the decision-making body of the master plan. There are people who actually are going to be voting on the content and makeup of the plan. Underneath the planning committee, there were work groups that are established to study key elements of the plan. We'll get into that in just a moment. The coordinating committee is a subgroup of the planning committee that basically just meets to try and agendize what the planning committee is going to be discussing at any given planning committee meeting. There's also the agency forum, which are the public agencies that have ownership or regulatory jurisdiction over the planning area. The planning committee, there are approximately 30 planning committee members. These are some of the more renowned, I guess, City of Los Angeles Department of Water and Power, Great Basin, Fish and Game, State Lands Commission, Inyo County, the local tribes there. There's also other stakeholders, the Audubon Society, Eastern Sierra Land Trust, Sierra Club. This is just a few of them. We meet once a month, basically. There have been approximately 10 meetings, and as I mentioned before, they kicked off in January 2010. Actually, the first meeting was March. The meetings are typically held in either Bishop or Keeler. Keeler is on the eastern side of the lake itself. Key elements of the plan. These were identified from the various stakeholders. Dust control is the driver, as I mentioned before. because of the shallow flooding that has gone on the lake, that DWP has put water on the lake, it's attracted a lot of birds. There's also other types of wildlife there, elk and other things. Water conservation is important to the City of Los Angeles. State Lands Commission is very interested in the public trust values. We've identified those as public access and recreation, habitat, and the scenic viewshed, the aesthetics of the Owens Valley. Other key elements are public access and interpretation, cultural resources. There are tribes there, and they're very concerned about sites, former, you know, fishing sites, burial sites, that type of thing. There is a mining operation on the lake that we lease out to. There are also grazing leases along the edge of the lake bed. There's been a lot of talk about renewable energy on the lake, specifically a solar farm. There's other economic development that the county is interested, specifically tourism, anything that could develop tourism in that area and utilize the restaurants and hotels there. And then the other key component of the plan would be monitoring and adaptive management to make sure that the elements in the plan are implemented and carried out over the period of time. One of the key elements, as I mentioned, is habitat. The Habitat Work Group has developed what's known as the Habitat Suitability Index, and this is a measurement that they basically have looked over all the data, the bird counts for the various cells on the lake, and identified those areas that have been attracting birds. And from this, they've expressed these areas as value acres. And from that, they look to see what, now that they've identified what areas are value acres, how they can actually enhance other habitat areas on the lake. This is a map of the lake. It's kind of an overlay. It's primarily the dust control areas. That's all the colored areas, primarily around the eastern side. The areas that have been identified as having habitat values, the value acres, are shown in the cross hatching, and they're a little bit more difficult to see, primarily up along the, thank you, up along the top there and along the lower edges. Now, going forward, the Planning Committee has been meeting since March of last year. We've broken down into the various work groups to identify the key elements. Those work groups are drafting the parts of the master plan, the relevant sections. We also have hired an environmental consultant to do an EIR that is going to also analyze the master plan. As you can see from this flowchart, the processes are going to run more or less parallel. And the CEQA, the actual EIR process, is going to kick off later this summer. And the actual draft EIR will be completed later towards the end of this year, with the final EIR and master plan hopefully being done sometime the spring or summer of next year. These are the next steps, getting going on the draft master plan. As I said, we're writing the elements of it right now. We should have a draft master plan out in the summer or fall of this year. There'll be an EIR scoping meeting, and the EIR, the draft EIR, will use the draft master plan as its basis for analysis. That EIR, the draft EIR, should be done by early 2012. The final EIR and the master plan and a memorandum of agreement should be done by the summer of 2012. The memorandum of agreement will be pretty much the a device to help implement the plan elements, basically who's going to do what, who's going to be responsible for doing what. And then we hope to, at some point, as part of this process, the City of Los Angeles and State Lands Commission staff have actually looked into consolidating all the leases and amendments that are out there on the lake into one consolidated master lease. It would just streamline the process. Then we could just simply amend that master lease for any future dust control needs. So that's where we're at. If you have any questions, I'm available. The City of Los Angeles Department of Water and Power staff are also available. They were going to submit a speaking request form, but in the interest of time, they were going to leave that to you if you have any questions for them.
Are there questions in the commission?
Hey, just you know, curiosity. Once you analyze the plan, what's the plan going to include? How do you deal with dust mitigation in such a large area?
Well, I think, and speaking on from DWP's perspective, they want to use less water on the lake. So we're looking at ways of combinations of other dust control methods that could free up more water. And again, those would be variations of gravel and managed vegetation, right. Maybe like a hybrid mix of them. It gives a more natural appearance but uses less water. Like it would almost look like a stream bed type motif.
Interesting. Yeah, I think some of the planning is the fact that certain avian species that they're trying to attract don't need as deep a water as is currently being there. And so if they are able to reconfigure some of the basin areas, they could have more habitat, more shoreline, less deep water, and that way LA would have more water for their ratepayers, and yet the environmental impact would be a positive one rather than a negative one. So that's what we're hoping for in the long run. LA has made a significant investment in dealing with the air quality problems that exist there. The PM10 is the worst measured in the United States, and so this is a significant health problem, and they've invested a great deal of money, so it's a very important project, and that's why we wanted to bring it to the commission at this point.
Yeah. And from the State Lands Commission's perspective, we don't want to see any erosion of public trust values, and the city of Los Angeles has actually agreed that they don't want to see that either. Getting rid of water or freeing up water, as long as it doesn't affect habitat, I think we're all good with that. And as a matter of fact, the city is looking at, as Curtis mentioned, ways that these hybrid dust control measures could actually enhance habitat value.
Excellent. Thank you. Thank you for the work. Looking forward to learning more. No public comment on this, more presentation. Does anyone wish to speak? Come on up. You don't have to fill every form. That's too bureaucratic.
Thank you, Lieutenant Governor. Dan Taylor on behalf of Audubon, California. And it seems like birds are the theme of the afternoon, but this is a case, I think, where we can talk about birds without argument. We are one of the active stakeholders in this process, and I come here today simply to communicate our strong support for the effort and our appreciation for the leadership of the State Lands Commission and the staff. They're doing a terrific job there. This may be one of those opportunities where we can actually seize an outcome that's bigger than what any of us would have perhaps expected initially. Dust control for public health benefits, water for wildlife. By the way, when water was put on that lake, within weeks, 40 to 60,000 birds had shown up. So word quickly got around, as well as economic benefits, and more importantly, or as importantly for the State Lands Commission, public trust and recreational opportunities as well. So a lot of important work to do. We're an eager participant. We thank you for your efforts and look forward to getting this thing finished.
Excellent. Thank you. Thank you very much. Anyone else? Please, come on up. If you could just state your name for the record.
Certainly. Good afternoon. I'm William Van Wagner with the Los Angeles Department of Water and Power. And I just wanted to kind of follow up on some of these previous comments. We're extremely excited about this master plan effort. The level of energy and interest that we've seen kind of wrapping around helping us come up with this plan. And I think we're really looking at a potential win-win here where we can actually sustain that habitat in a much more sustainable way from the perspective of the state's water resources. And we're very excited about that. And I think Colin hit the nail on the head with sort of looking at hybrids and actually ways to make the landscape work better, both in terms of habitat, but also for aesthetics and public access as well, which I understand are important public trust values. One point of clarification on the consolidation of the leases, that's actually something we're working on right now. It's underway. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you. Thanks for your work. Anybody else wish to comment on this item? Seeing no one, we'll close public comment. Any final comments from staff?
No, other than I think Bill mentioned it very well, and that is that we think there's a much better effort going on now than in the past. All the stakeholders are participating on an ongoing basis, and we're getting a great deal of cooperation from the city and helping to sponsor that cooperation, so we're very appreciative of that.
Excellent. Thank you.
And thanks. If I could recommend that we now go to the item on San Francisco and
167?
Yeah, probably.
Yes. Item number 67? Great. So we'll go back to item 67. And Jennifer, you want to lead us off?
I will. I have a PowerPoint presentation.
That is, there you go. Commission staff respectfully request your consideration of calendar item 67, the title settlement, public trust land exchange and boundary line agreement, and the Candlestick Point State Recreation Area reconfiguration, improvement and transfer agreement. As part of these agreements, the commission staff also requests your consideration of the termination of the existing lease to state parks and the issuance of a new lease to state parks for certain lands within Candlestick Point, and also for the authorization to enter into a boundary line agreement. In 2009, the legislature enacted Chapter 2003, better known as SB 792, for the purpose of facilitating the productive reuse of the former Hunters Point Naval Shipyard and Candlestick Point. Currently, both of these sites are severely underutilized and in a dilapidated condition. This slide shows Candlestick Point, which is currently being used on an intermittent basis for parking for Candlestick Park. Again, the state recreation area on the lower picture you can see is in very underutilized. This slide shows Hunters Point, again, very underutilized and in need of a lot of improvement. SB 792 authorizes the commission to carry out an exchange of lands that will place or confirm the public trust on lands that are no longer on lands with substantial value for the public trust and terminate the trust in lands that are no longer useful for trust purposes. The trust agreement and the transfer agreement are in furtherance of the legislature's direction contained in SB 792. These agreements, if approved, will facilitate the Hunters Point Shipyard and Candlestick Point Phase 2 project, a redevelopment of more than 700 acres of waterfront land along the San Francisco's southeastern shores, and the redevelopment of the Candlestick Point State Recreation Area. The parties to the agreement are the Commission, State Parks, the San Francisco Redevelopment Agency, the City and County of San Francisco, and the Port of San Francisco. The parties to the transfer agreement are the Commission, State Parks, and the San Francisco Redevelopment Agency. The area that is subject to the trust agreement includes lands within Candlestick Point and the shipyard that were historic tide and submerged lands subject to the common law public trust, were historic uplands not subject to the trust, and were historic tidelands in which the public trust may have been terminated. More specifically, the shipyard site contains lands that were historic uplands and lands that were below the historic ordinary high water mark. Beginning in the 1860s, the legislature authorized the conveyance of tide and submerged lands at the shipyard through various statutes. In 1939, the United States began acquiring lands in part by condemnation for the purposes of constructing and operating the Hunters Point Naval Shipyard. The shipyard was closed by the United States in 1974. The state and federal government disagree as to the effect of these federal condemnations on the existence of the public trust interest in the shipyard lands. This disagreement adds to the trust title uncertainties within the shipyard. In addition, the city also asserts certain reserve rights and interests in the shipyard. The state's sovereign interests in the filled tidelands at Candlestick Point involve primarily reserved streets and portions of a former railroad right-of-way. In 1973, the legislature authorized state parks to acquire and develop property at Candlestick Point for the state park system. State parks subsequently acquired certain private lands near and along the shoreline of Candlestick Point to create the state recreation area. The commission subsequently leased most of its lands to state parks for inclusion in that recreation area. The purpose of the trust agreement is to settle certain boundary and title disputes related to the public trust and to establish and reconfigure the location of lands subject to the trust and lands free of the trust within the subject area through a land exchange. So going back, here in the light blue here are the extent of the state's claims to the area, both at Hunters Point and at Candlestick Point. At the end of the exchange, all the state's trust interests will be reconfigured and consolidated along the shoreline band to create a consolidated public trust ownership around those two areas. The exchange will be accomplished through recorded conveyances and occur in several phases, beginning with the initial phase, followed by subsequent phases based on cleanup efforts by the Navy. At all times during the phasing, the trust monetary value will always be greater than the value of the trust termination parcels. The reason for the phasing is because the shipyard is currently owned by the Navy. Pursuant to federal legislation and various agreements, the Navy is authorized to convey to the shipyard to the agency in phases after all the necessary hazardous materials cleanup is complete. In the event of an early transfer of any phase conveyance, the commission would have to find that there are sufficient implementation and liability measures in place prior to any conveyance. It is anticipated that the entire exchange will take several years to complete, with final build-out of the project estimated at 15 to 20 years. Following the completion of the exchange, the entire waterfront within the subject area, as well as certain interior lands that have high public trust values, will be subject to the trust. The trust termination lands will be conveyed to either state parks or the agency, free of any public trust interests. On this slide, those areas of Hunter's Point and Candlestick that are shaded in solid dark gray will be the final public trust lands. Those areas shaded in light gray will be the trust termination parcels. SB 792 requires the commission to ensure that significant view corridors to the waterfront are protected, adequate public access is provided, and other conditions related to the hillside open space are met. The hillside open space is that area. Excuse me, Curtis, can you hand me that? Thank you. That area right here of the, excuse me, it's touchy, right here of Hunter's Point Shipyard. And that's actually a hilltop area that provides expansive views of the waterfront in San Francisco Bay. More specifically, the hillside open space area is a benefit to the public trust because it provides passive recreational opportunities to experience these expansive views of the San Francisco Bay and the waterfront. To this end, the trust agreement requires, among other things, that the construction of new buildings within a shipyard conform to certain height limitations in order to ensure views of San Francisco Bay and the waterfront. The trust agreement also requires that public pedestrian and vehicular access between the hillside open space and the waterfront be maintained, and that streets and transportation facilities located on the trust lands serve primarily trust purposes of access to shoreline improvements and shoreline circulation. Further, the trust agreement provides that parking be available to the public for regional and statewide use and not be restricted to residential parking. And finally, the trust agreement protects the state from any liability to the owners of properties upslope and on the southerly downslope side of the hillside open space from any ground failure that should occur on lands at the hillside open space. The trust agreement also provides for a boundary line agreement for the purposes of fixing the agreed agreed 1869 ordinary high water mark within Candlestick Point, and to confirm that the public trust does not encumber certain lands within the Alice Griffith site. The trust agreement also provides for the termination of the existing lease to state parks and the issuance of a new lease to state parks for those lands on this slide colored in dark gray for those parcels within the state recreation area. In addition to authorizing a public trust exchange, SB 792 authorizes a reconfiguration of the Candlestick Point State Recreation Area. Pursuant to the proposed transfer agreement, state parks, the commission, and the agency will make certain conveyances to implement the state recreation area reconfiguration. The transfer agreement does not provide for the conveyance of any trust termination lands. The commission would only be conveying certain lands to the agency in trust. Specifically, the transfer agreement provides for the phase conveyance by the commission of portions of the site identified in this slide, and the phase conveyance by state parks of certain lands to the agency in exchange for $50 million in improvements. It's kind of hard to see, but the lands, that state lands, the commission will be conveying to the agency in trust are highlighted in dark gray, and those light gray areas are what are what the state parks is going to be conveying to the agency in exchange for the $50 million in improvements. In addition to meeting all the legal elements required by SB 792, commission staff believes that both agreements are in the best interest of the state for a variety of reasons, including the reconfiguration and consolidation of public trust lands, the improvement and enhancement of public trust parcels through the development of a wide variety of open space areas, bike trails, walking and jogging paths, viewing areas to experience views of San Francisco Bay and the waterfront, visitor serving facilities, and other trust consistent uses. Other reasons that these agreements are in the best interest of the state is that the reconfiguration, redesign, and improvement of the state recreation area for regional and statewide visitors will provide a significant benefit to the state. It will also settle very complex and longstanding title and boundary issues. It will facilitate the hazardous material remediation, and it also provides the state protection from liability for those hazardous materials and slope failure. Commission staff and the Attorney General's office have reviewed the proposed agreements and believe all necessary legal elements have been met. Staff recommends that the commission approve both the proposed trust agreement and the transfer agreement, including the specific findings in the staff report, and authorize its execution. That concludes my presentation, and I'm available for any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Clancy. Thank you for your work on this, and I have so much that I can say and add, having spent literally 17 years of my life on this. But if there's no comments from the commission at this point, I first just open up to public comment to the extent people are here to speak on this item, and then I'll, after listening, as I have patiently to hundreds, in hundreds of hearings to people on this, make my comments known. And is there anyone here? This is... Okay, look at that. Oh, there we go. All right, you're all here. A lot of familiar faces. I didn't see you all in the back. Linda, come on up. Ms. Richardson, if you could state your name and everybody, yeah, if we've got, are you guys have, did you all fill out forms? Oh, you did. Okay, good. Well, we'll just make this up as we go. But Ms. Richardson.
Good afternoon to the Honorable Lieutenant Governor of California, Gavin Newsom. To distinguished commissioners and staff members. My name is Linda Richardson, and I am here today as the Project Area Committee, Baby Hunters Point, and as the chair of the Land Use Committee. We have spent decades working with the San Francisco Redevelopment Agency and all the city agency of San Francisco for the development of the shipyard, you know, development project. Working with the San Francisco Redevelopment Agency, to us, one of the finest redevelopment agency in the state of California. This project helped us to facilitate the development of phase two of the shipyard, you know, project. And as your staff mentioned before, we are talking of an area that is dilapidated, that needs to have revitalization. And this is a public-private partnership. And this is one of the signature project, not only in the state of California, but I would say in the country. Here you have a set of trust agreement that will enable $50 million to be spent on the Candlestick Point recreation area, an area right now that has limited access in one of the most environmentally sensitive in the country. I think what you have is a win-win situation. When the Candlestick project is developed, we are going to be having a state-of-the-art facilities for the environment, and will also help to revitalize the economy of Baby Hunters Point for the southeast sector of California. Listen, you have here a dual project, and we please urge your approval of the staff of resolution. I think this is a win-win situation. And while we're here, we'd like to let you know that the San Francisco Development Agency is a jewel in the state of California, and we know that we wanted to urge a continuance of that agency because of the successful projects in enhancing people's life, and this is one such project. So thank you for your time here. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair. It's good to see you all and committee members. I don't know what possessed me to get behind Linda. I feel like a bad commercial at the end of a good movie. But I'm here in support of this exchange agreement, being a part of the Project Area Committee. My name is once again Gary Banks. I'm a pastor of the Marketplace Fellowship Church in San Francisco and also the founder of the Family Restoration House, which is a nonprofit organization in the Bayview Hunters Point community. And I'm a sit on the I'm a co-chair of the Economic and Housing Committee for the PAC. And we've this has been a long and tedious process. I've been a part of this for the last 10 years. And this project has also been highly vetted by every committee. We've had hundreds of community meetings and workshops, as well as support from the Board of Supervisors and the Project Area Committee and the CAC Committee as well. And also the voters of San Francisco voted for this under Proposition G, which was hosted at my church. Ha-ha. But we're excited about what's going on. And also there are many benefits that's going to take place through this project. We have over $83 million community benefits. We're looking at over 10,000 housing structures going up with a high percentage of homes for low-income families, and also job opportunities, and it's just going to be an incredible project for the city of San Francisco. So we urge that you support this project. This is the stepping stone in getting us moving in the right direction. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Pastor.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, Al Norman, Bayview Merchants Association. And we're coming to you before the day, and I guess you see that we have a good cross-section of our community. And like Ms. Richardson said, we came and it was redevelopment. A lot of people are critical of redevelopment, redevelopment this and redevelopment that. But we were asked redevelopment to come back in our neighborhood because we had been a long neglected part of San Francisco. And redevelopment was the vehicle we choose to increase our economic opportunities within our community to become a significant part of San Francisco for which we had been denied. We came out here, war families from the 40s and the 50s. Our mothers and fathers and grandfathers worked at the shipyard closed, economic development, the slaughterhouses, all the different things that brought us out, our parents and our grandparents out here from the South. And so we were the first and second generation of these migrant workers coming out here to work in the shipyards and work in the slaughterhouses and do all the things. And then when the shipyard closed, it was a big depressed area in the Bayview Hunters Point area. And as you'll hear from Elder Walker and many of the other people who came up here with me today, this was the very thing that we needed to revitalize our community and to help provide the long needed business opportunities, employment opportunities, and all the opportunities that are afforded other folks everywhere else that we choose to bring to our community. They wanted to come out there, and we wanted them out there. We wanted Lennar out there doing the things that they're doing. And everything we could do to help them, to help us create an opportunity for us, we've done. And we just want to continue the legacy that your lieutenant governor provided us the opportunity to have in providing for our families and pulling ourselves up by our own bootstraps without having to depend on a bunch of other people. And the way the politics is going in this state now, y'all afford us every opportunity to help ourselves, and we're not getting very much from anyone else. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mr. Norman. Things I can't say, you just did.
How are you?
It's good to see you, Lieutenant Governor and Commissioners. Good afternoon. My name is Dr. Veronica Honeycutt, and I am the chair of the Hunters Point Shipyard Citizens Advisory Committee, one of two community oversight bodies who have been working with the city, with the community, and with the state in developing plans for the revitalization of the shipyard and Candlestick Point. And I am here today to urge you, not only on my behalf, but on behalf of the members of the Citizens Advisory Committee, We are urging you to support. We would like to urge you to support this particular matter before you. The Citizens Advisory Committee has been participating in the planning efforts for this project for more than a decade. And some of our original folks are still with us today. I think we're down to two. We've had two. When Lieutenant Governor was mayor, he was kind enough to appoint me to the committee and other individuals as well. And we have continued the legacy that these other folks who were with this project for so long a period of time, we've continued their legacy and are pushing very hard to make sure that everything is completed. And we are excited that the project secured final entitlements from the city last summer. The Bayview Hunters Point community has historically lacked access to basic resources, such as adequate open space, affordable housing, retail stores, even grocery stores, reliable transportation, and economic development opportunities. Now, I have been within the community in a number of contexts. One of the roles that I presently held was as dean of the Southeast Campus for City College of San Francisco. So I'm very familiar with the area because the students would come in to me and they would tell me about what they didn't have within the community and how difficult it was for them to take care of their basic needs. So that's why another way in which I am delighted about what is happening now in terms of getting the community together. This project will go a long way to addressing these issues in the community with the creation of thousands of units of affordable housing, hundreds of acres of new and restored open space, millions of dollars of investment in new transportation improvements, and very importantly, the rebuild of the dilapidated Alice Griffith Public Housing site. Besides the existing state park, there's virtually no public access to the shoreline along the community. This project will create a world-class system of interconnected waterfront parks, which will bring residents directly to the shoreline. And additionally, the project will invest millions of dollars to finish the build-out of the state park and provide a dedicated revenue source for operations and maintenance of the park, so we do not need to face closures due to the state's limited budget. Again, the Citizens Advisory Committee for the Shipyard endorsed the project and associated agreements last year, and I would urgently urge your support for the revitalization of the Bayview Hunters Point area by approving these agreements. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Honeycutt. Thank you. Next speaker, please. Good afternoon.
Hi. My name is Ronay Kent, and on behalf of the residents of Alice Griffith, I urge your support for these agreements. The residents of Alice Griffith has been engaged in the planning process for the development of the shipyard and Candlestick Point for years. We are excited about the project because it has prioritized the rebuild of Alice Griffith and will ensure that the existing residents will be able to move directly into new units without having to be relocated temporarily off-site. As an immediate neighbor of the state parks, I am supportive of the project plans to invest millions of dollars in improvements. Currently, the park is underutilized, and with the investment, it can become a regional resource for residents of Alice Griffith and others to enjoy. The agreements are necessary to move Alice Griffith and the Bayview forward and will provide new affordable housing units, jobs, economic development opportunities for residents. I urge your approval of these agreements. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. King. Reverend Walker.
To the distinguished and honorable chair, Lieutenant Governor Gavin Newsom, used to be my mayor, and I still accept him as my mayor.
God bless.
To the honorable chair persons that are here, it gives me a great pleasure as well as a pleasure and privilege to be able to come to Sacramento and speak concerning this issue. And I believe I heard that the staff recommended the approval of this project. I thought I heard that, and I appreciate the staff. What really got my attention, and the chair was correct, I mean, hundreds of meetings, in the community, in the neighborhood, and you heard it talk about the voting. Incidentally, I do pastor a church in Baby Hunters Point. I serve as chair of the African American Revitalization Consortium. It is a committee that is concerned about help implementing and help getting this project approved. Also, the Tabernacle Community Development Corporation, about five churches in the city. We are nonprofit developers within the area, and I represent them today in support, and we highly appreciate. Again, when I saw the staff presenting all of the visual aid that have been presented here this afternoon, that was the most magnificent auto visual aid as you looked at the layout of the shipyard and development. Incidentally, it would be 10,500 units of housing that will be built. 32% of those housing will be affordable, and the mayor, my mayor made sure that that would happen. 10,000 permanent jobs as well as construction jobs and all of that. And the land use of the state park, I walked that park 4 days a week. And I just celebrated my 80th birthday. And I've developed what I call the 8-0 Club. And I'd like to invite the mayor to join my club and many of the commissioners to join my club. And unfortunately, I can't get too many people to join my club because you have to be 80 years old to do that. But you know, it's a beautiful area in the park, but the area I walk. I mean, it's not going to be bothered, and all that's going to continue. But the other area that we're talking about, the 23 acres, I believe it is just a parking lot for the 49ers for all of these years. But now it'll be utilized to help beautify. And the last comment I'd like to make is that so many times we talk about the poor area there, but this project will be the economical engine that will drive the positiveness in all areas of that city. So thank you very much, and I appreciate the staff, and I believe you're going to go along with the staff recommendation. Thank you.
Reverend. Thank you. Reverend Walker. Yeah. Any additional public comment? Is anyone here? Anyone else here to speak? Thank you, on this item.
Good afternoon, Mr. Afternoon. Chair, Commissioners. Tiffany Bohee with the San Francisco Mayor's Office of Economic and Workforce Development. The city's plan to revitalize the former Hunters Point Naval Shipyard and Candlestick Point areas is one of the most important development projects in the city's history due to the scope and scale of the public benefits that it will deliver to the city and the state as a whole. After years of planning work, as you heard and personally experienced many of you, and with the overwhelming support of San Francisco voters, the city approved all necessary land use entitlements for the project last summer, including authorization to execute these agreements. The development plans call for building well over 10,000 housing units, with 32% of those housing units set aside as below market rates, including the complete rebuild of the Alice Griffith Public Housing site. In addition, the project will generate millions of square feet of much-needed retail and commercial uses, including what will be a major center for clean and green technologies. As you heard, at full build-out, the project will create over 10,000 permanent jobs, thousands of ongoing construction jobs, and the project will invest over $1 billion in new transit and sustainable infrastructure improvements. As you saw from the images in the staff presentation, what exists at these sites today provide little benefit to the public or the public trust. Importantly for state lands, following the exchange, the entire waterfront shoreline spanning the length of the shipyard and Candlestick Point all the way to the county line, as well as other lands, will be subject to the public trust. For state parks, this project will provide tremendous benefits. State parks will receive, as you heard, $50 million in consideration for park improvements, funding for operation and maintenance at Candlestick, as well as land for enhanced access at the shoreline. In our current economic climate of constrained resources, by utilizing a true public-private partnership, the project, along with these agreements, will cause tens of millions of dollars of public open space, habitat investments, and public access improvements, all at no cost to the state or the city's general fund. Lastly, we'd like to thank the diligent work and efforts of the staff of the Commission and State Parks. We look forward to implementing this project in partnership with the state. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you very much.
Additional public comment? And anyone else that wishes to speak, if you can line up, and grateful for the testimony so far.
Commissioner Newsom, other commissioners, public, my name is Bill Herms. I'm the Deputy Director for California State Parks. You have heard a great deal about the benefits that California State Parks will receive from these agreements. We are extremely excited about this project. And I did want to take a few moments also to thank the staff of the current mayor and the former mayor of San Francisco, who have worked tirelessly for years to bring this project before this commission, as well as the attorneys from the Attorney General's office, State Park staff. This has been a very large team that has worked extremely well together. I would like to thank Jennifer Lucchese and Curtis Fossum for the cooperative nature that State Parks and State Lands came together to solve some extremely difficult problems. This is a very large project, as you well know, with a lot of moving parts, and without that spirit of cooperation, it would have taken us a lot longer and been a lot more difficult, and I want to thank them and everybody who was involved. As you've heard, State Parks will receive $50 million as a result of the approval of these agreements, $10 million for operations and maintenance of the park, and an additional $40 million to renovate what is currently an underutilized park. So we are very excited about the fact to bring this park to a level where it will be a world-class park, not just for the people of the state of California and the people of the Bay Area, but most notably for the people of Hunters Point and the local community that we have longed to serve, and we are very excited about having the opportunity to do that in the future. I'm available for additional comments. I did want to mention that in your packet you also have a letter from Director Ruth Coleman explaining that she has executed her duties under SB 792 and is prepared to execute this agreement should the commission approve. And we wholeheartedly request your support for this item and this project. Thank you.
Thanks, Bill. Thanks for all your help and support. Anyone else that wishes to speak on this item? Seeing none, we'll close public comment. Let me thank everybody that took the time to get up here to speak. I'm grateful for that, and I understand the commute is well or better than anybody. So I know what you're about to get in for when you go back home. So I'll try to get you out of here as quickly as I can. I just want to make a few comments. You know, you look back, and I'm not in the nostalgic phase of my life, but necessarily, but I hope not. But you know, 7 years as a mayor of San Francisco, and about 7+ years as a city supervisor, and one of the things that we were most vexed with, one of the things we remain, which remains vexing, and things we struggle with in San Francisco, is dealing with the issue of income inequality, dealing with the issue of concentrated poverty, and dealing with the issue of environmental justice. And these issues remain quite acute and visible in the southeast sector of our city. There's extraordinary things that are going on, and extraordinary leaders, and you heard from a number of them that are here today, that have always given us an ember of hope that we can once again, and I say once again, bring back to life the energy of this community, because that life was taken out when the Navy pulled out of the area, made a lot of promises, and never necessarily, and it's not an attack, but never necessarily followed through on a lot of their promises and commitments. So we've been working for years and years, and this goes back to many administrations. Supervisors have come and gone, mayors that have come and gone, but the one constant is the community. And the one constant are the people that said we can do more and we can do better. And I just want to applaud their diligence, their tenacity, their commitment, because this is an area of our state where we have prostate cancer rates, cervical cancer rates, breast cancer rates that are 2 to 4 times the state and federal average. And this is part of the state of California where just a few years ago, you had 2 of the most polluting power plants in the country, not just in our state. Because of their work, we shut down the Bayview Hunters Point plant, and we've torn it down. And because of their work, we just shut down in January, one of the last big items on my agenda as mayor, the Morant plant, because of good leadership of ISO, but more importantly, because of the community. And here we are now, having done that, where we have now a foundation. because of Leader Pelosi's support on remediation dollars, because of Dianne Feinstein's incredible leadership on remediation dollars. Hundreds of millions of dollars we've drawn down from the federal government, more than all the other shipyards in America combined. Not something I was supposed to say as mayor, but I can say that as lieutenant governor. Nice to know the Speaker of the House. Nice to know senior senator. It was your former mayor. And we got the voters to support a new vision. We got an environmental review done. We got two boards of supervisors, and trust me, you think it's tough up here in Sacramento. I know the tone and tenor has changed now. Everyone loves everybody since I've gone, but that may just be momentary. But that was difficult, and a lot of battles, a lot of scars. But to revitalize a public housing site that's the only gated public housing site in San Francisco, and why do you gate public housing? It's because it was so dangerous, and it was so war-torn, literally, that the community said enough, and they wanted to gate themselves off from the surrounding community. To revitalize that, to bring back to life this community, 2 million square feet of R&D space for green tech, and what a symbolism that is, the old economy to the new economy, 700,000 square feet of retail, the 10,500 housing units you heard of, the 32% that'll be affordable, the workforce training commitments from the developer, the commitments we've made to local hire, the commitments we've made to ongoing jobs, not just the construction jobs. But the area that's in front of us is the area of open space and parks. And, it's amazing. You go to parts of Bayview, but a few hundred yards from what you just saw, and people have never been on the bayfront. They live right there. They just see it. They never actually experience it. And it's difficult to navigate. And you saw some of those photos, and it's a disgrace. And so we had to fight. Former Supervisor Leno, came Assemblyman Leno now, Senator Leno led the charge on SB 792. And, that was a struggle. But we keep fighting for those that just sort of argue for a status quo that is perplexing to some, concerned or scared about change. But these guys are the leaders that promoted change but delivered it, and not just as a slogan, but they manifested it. And this is part of that. And we're right at the edge now where this can be made real and we can get to work. And this was one of the last big things. And so how fortuitous it is for me personally, just a bookmark and all these things from my years as supervisor mayor and now on the state lands, that I can urge my colleagues to support this and to support the outstanding work of the staff and Ms. Lucchese, the state parks staff and others that have really stewarded this through, asked tough questions, because none of this is easy and none of this is self-evident or obvious. This is a complicated trust transfer and deal. And they did it with extraordinary alacrity, and I'm grateful for that. And I'm grateful that all of you are here to hear me out, because I'm very passionate about this and very proud of what is about to happen in this community. Any comments?
Well, I'll just add something a little bit. As you know, our newest governor has has a proposal out to eliminate redevelopment agencies, of which this has a very significant role in it. But I think you've also heard him say that his intention was never to undo or disrupt any significant projects that were, under contract, underway. And so I'm here also to add our support of the project and acknowledge that this is exactly what the redevelopment has been used for and is a good project. So we'll be adding our support.
They all like hearing that.
Yeah, I just wanted to thank everyone who came here from San Francisco, the long drive to tell us about the, what is, I guess, close to the consummation of this wonderful, wonderful project. Mm-hmm. So we're going to be happy to support it.
30 plus years.
If I may, Mr. Chair, I'd also like to reflect that your staff has been working for a number of, your staff, meaning the commission, has been working for a number of years on this project and with representatives of the city and state parks, and they all work very hard on this. But I'd like to especially call out Jennifer and Joe Rusconi, who've worked on this for the Attorney General's office diligently for so many hours, so many days, months, years, and Mike Bell, our boundary officer, who on a number of occasions I've gone into the office on a weekend or even on a state holiday or late at night, and he was trying to help complete this transaction. So I wanted to especially mention those staff members.
Thank you, Mr. Bell. Thank you, Joe. Thank you. Well, thank you.
Is there a motion to approve?
So moved.
Seconded?
Second.
Without objection, we'll move this item. Thank you very much.
At this time, Mr. Chair, I'd like to, we have one last item to bring back before the commission, a resolution, but I'd like to.
Oh, we voted. That was unanimous.
Aye.
Not like those other committees. Yeah. Thank you all very much. Sorry for the delay.
I'd like to ask your diligence in maybe going into closed session at this time, and then we'll come back into public session for that last resolution, number 73.
Can we?
Clear the room until we come back into open session, we'd appreciate it.
Thank you. So we're back from closed session, and I want to thank everyone for their patience, any of you that waited outside for those deliberations to conclude. I wanted to take a moment and just quickly go back to item number 62, which was addressed at the consent calendar. And my chief of staff, Chris Garland, is here. And Chris, you were sitting in this chair when we deliberated in this body. Moved that item forward on the consent calendar. There have been some subsequent conversations. Perhaps you can illuminate us to what they were.
Absolutely. And first, let me apologize to the other commissioners. This is absolutely my fault. I should have pulled C-62 at the Lieutenant Governor's direction and did not. Subsequently, we've spoken to counsel and thanked them very much, both the in-house counsel and the Attorney General's office. And we've spoken to Chris Garner at the Long Beach City Council, Long Beach Oil and Gas Department. He's the director. And with his consent, it was agreed that we would pull item C-62 for future consideration inside the 45-day timeline and at a special meeting of this body.
Joe, you want to add to that?
I think that characterizes it, although I would say that what they agreed to was a...
to rescind?
A rescission, or that the approval is voided and it will be revisited completely within that 45-day statutory period.
Where it will be publicly noticed and people have a chance to discuss.
Correct.
Right. And I would just like to make sure that the commissioners commission is unified in that approach.
After concurrence that you've talked to the city and they're okay, and it will be reheard at another publicly noticed meeting.
Thank you.
That's fine.
Yeah, and let me thank the city for their willingness to do that under these circumstances, and I'm grateful to both of you for indulging me and giving me an opportunity. I need more time to understand the nuances and the details of this item. And candidly, the more I learned, the more I realized I had a lot more to learn before I feel comfortable making a recommendation or actually voting on it. So I appreciate your indulgence. Thank you, Ms. Garland. There's one other item on the agenda.
Item 73 is a resolution, proposed resolution by 73. Yes.
Opposition.
Proposed resolution opposing legislation, and Jennifer DeLeon is going to present that for us.
Thank you, Ms. DeLeon.
There you go.
There you are.
Gotcha. Thank you so much. Item 73 was the fourth of four that we've asked the commissioners to take action on today. This is a request that the commission oppose Senate Bill 876. This bill would mandate a lease term of 99 years for private shoreline protection structures. That would be for the use of private parties. And it would limit the commission from doing rent reviews or setting rent at what they feel is appropriate, and would instead tie the rent adjustment to the consumer price index. This conflicts with our current authority to grant private property owners the right to build and maintain such structures, as long as they don't unreasonably interfere with the uses and purposes reserved to the people of the state. We also have the authority to set appropriate rent. The reason we are requesting your opposition to this bill is because we feel it limits the authority of the commission to set a reasonable lease term, which currently we do not do in excess of 49 years. And this would mandate a 99-year lease term. It also limits our ability to adjust rent. In the current language of the bill, the number of times that the rent could be adjusted is left blank. It says only once every blank number of years, and only to the consumer price index. We feel that that does not bear any relationship to real estate values, but instead is tied to consumer goods and services, and it's therefore an inappropriate indicator. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Comments?
No, if there's no public comment, I'm happy to move staff's recommendation.
Good. Is there any public comment anyone wish to speak on this item? I see none. We'll close public comment. There have been tough choices, and then there are easy choices. This one's the latter, not the former. Any comments?
No, but as the Director of Finance, will abstain on a
as supporting
that piece
well
of legislation
done.
Right now. Thank you.
Well done. I would do the same, see what happens in the process. Well, that leaves you and me.
So I will move it.
Moved, seconded, without objection. We will move to oppose that bill. Any other items coming forward today, agenda?
No, Mr. Chair, there is not. We had one noticed speaker for the public comment session, but I don't believe that person. I think they notified staff that they were no longer interested.
Good. Is there anyone? Did someone wish to speak at this stage and may have not filled out a form? I don't see that. Okay. Very good. And there may be an additional comment.
I hate to belabor the meeting. I have one tiny legislative item to make a comment on. Curtis or Jennifer, can you respond to the Skinner bill, AB 982? We understand amendments might be on the way, which is great. They'll be more SLC friendly, hopefully. It seems like it could be a win-win for California's teachers, energy, alternative energy, and for us. But can you just address it for a moment?
Absolutely. Staff submitted a bill analysis to the Resources Agency on this bill, and our position as a staff was that we would like to support this bill if it was amended. The bill calls for the Energy Commission and the State Lands Commission to work together to provide expanded opportunities for alternative energy. The concerns the staff have right now is that it the way it's drafted, it talks about the Energy Commission actually doing the leasing of the property, state property, as opposed to the commission. We have not been involved in any detailed communication conversations with the author's office. We've put out feelers, and we have talked to our former legislative liaison, who is over in the assembly now, and is going to be working also with Assemblywoman Skinner to see if we can't bring to conclusion a bill that we can support and make sense. We think the bigger logjam, really, in this area of consolidating state properties for alternative energy in the desert is the Bureau of Land Management and the fact that, one, they own most of the land out in the desert where these solar opportunities are. They do owe the commission school lands in the hundreds of thousands of over 100,000 acres. We'd like to exchange with them and get some opportunities for solar, but they also have a competing program to develop solar power. So it's going to be interesting to see how that works out. We've had programs in the past to consolidate with BLM. In fact, the governor last year approved the commission approved, and the governor actually executed an agreement that would have brought in $8 million for the state teachers retirement system for us to buy additional acres that we could use for solar projects or other revenue generating for the state teachers retirement system. And the General Accounting Office of the federal government found that BLM had failed to comply with federal law. So even when the state goes through the entire process and spends years on these things, the federal government ends up being a roadblock. So we hope that this bill can be amended in a way that will help, but we also need support from the state back in Washington, D.C. to try and urge cooperation with federal agencies to try and, because I think everybody realizes alternative energy is what's needed for the nation as well as the state. And so if we can work on cooperative basis with them, that's going to be the real road to the future on this. So we'll be back to you before too many more months, I would hope, with suggestions in that regard as well.
That's great. Good to hear. Thank you. Is there any other business before the commission?
No. You have adopted also on the consent calendar future meetings for the commission.
Oh, right.
Yes.
Yeah,
smart. So I'd ask that your staffs try and
calendar those.
Calendar those, but I also will be, as we mentioned, I think the special meeting that we're going to be having now later this month, Kim will be talking to your office to try and get a date and time that works. And it may be multiple locations, but we'll work on that and get it posted as soon as we can.
Excellent.
Thank you very much.
Until then, thank you all very much.
Thank you.